from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening and good morning, as the case may be, across whatever time zone you reside in. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chain in the west, chains, actually eastward all the way to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet, the ever-growing internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Welcome to the program. Well, the first thing I have for you is a Mel's poll update. Minutes before broadcast, I received what is a fax, which is dubbed Subject Final Poll Report. Check this out, guys. First of all, I want to thank you, your listeners, and your callers. I particularly want to thank the skeptics, because they are the ones that really help me. I have decided to take the money and run. I have made a lease agreement with regard to my land. The lease is to provide me with a sum of money to be deposited into an account in Australia. The money in Australia would allow me to immigrate to Australia, because I would normally be unable to immigrate there because of my age. Australia, unlike the U.S., has very strict rules regarding immigration. The balance of the mortgage on the land will be paid off by the leasing party. I will be paid a sum of money each month for the next 100 years. Should I predecess the term of the lease, the money, it's hard to read, is to go to my estate. Oh, I see. If I die, in other words. If it is feasible, based on the leasing party's use of the land, I am to have my remains, upon my demise, returned to the U.S. and be disposed of in the whole. Last item is based on the future use of the whole. If any commercial use of the land is made by the leasing party, their agents, or any other entity, I am to receive 5% of the gross revenues generated by the land.
Wow.
This would be in addition to the monthly lease amount. The lease can be renewed at the end of the term by request of the leasing party. I will be indemnified against any damage to the land or environment based on actions of the leasing party. This is quite remarkable. I'm reading this as you're hearing it as I'm reading it. There will be no charges of drug manufacturing against me. I will not be charged with the importation and propagation of non-native plants. Any materials regarding my research will be returned to me. Any personal items remaining on the property will be returned to me, so long as they do not compromise the security of the property. In return, I am not to release any photographs, written or oral descriptions as to the location, or any information that would compromise the security of the property. This is in caps. I do not wish to talk to the press. In my opinion, there is no press other than Art Bell. If you want to be on the cutting edge, Art Bell is the guy sharpening the knife at all. That's nice. Though things were pretty scary at times, everything worked out well. I'm certain that if I never contacted you to begin with, I would not have been as fortunate as I am today. It is amazing what can happen over the span of just a few days, Friday. I'm trying to make it to the end of the month now. Now money will not be a problem, ever. Thank you and all, and let Mel's Hole enter into that murky territory of urban mythology or conspiracy theory. This is the end of the trail. Mel. P.S. Yes, they will tell me about the true nature of the hole. No, you will not hear it from me. Huh. That just came in prior to airtime. Now, I have had a gazillion requests from Old Strange Universe and a whole bunch of newspapers and people who wanted to contact Mel, and I, of course, did not pass along his number without permission and wouldn't do that. And so there you have it. About 2 minutes prior to airtime, that fax came in, and I'll read that one more time later in the morning so all of the audience is sure to get it. Wow. the final saga, question mark, in Mel's Hole. I've got two other hole stories here that we'll get to later. Remarkable hole stories. Now, for tonight, first of all, for the past 2 weeks, this just in, Australia has been repeatedly visited by UFOs. Over, get this, folks, 50 encounters have been reported since February 1, including two lands in the landings in the suburbs of Melbourne. The flap began Saturday, February 1, with an incident in Tasmania, the island off Australia's southern coast. A family there reporting finding traces of a weird, bright yellow slime jelly in their yard. Ooh, that sounds familiar. At 9:45 p.m. in Broken Hill, New South Wales, a city 750 kilometers west of Sydney, people reported, quote, sighting two bright lights traveling northwest to southeast. At 9:51 p.m., another man saw a glowing object fly from the southeast to the northwest. And on and on and on the reports go, and I've got a good dozen reports here from Australia. So in the land down under, things are really hopping and popping UFO-wise. On this side of the pond, there is a most remarkable thing for you to see. Photographs of the house of the man that I'm about to interview. John Shepherd is his name. And he runs something called Project STRAT, S-T-R-A-T, acronym, for Special Telemetry Research and Tracking. It began in the spring of 1972. Through a dedicated effort, the project became fully operational by 1973. Now, I'm not going to read this whole thing. It's up on the website. And what I recommend to you is that you get up there right away and take a look at the Project STRAT photographs and what John has done to his house. There are, a good half dozen photographs, I think, up there, and the whole story. Otherwise, we're going to unwind the story here on the air in a moment. So coming up, a man who is trying to contact UFOs from Michigan, and has been trying to for many years, John Shepherd. All right, now to Michigan. Let's find out what part of Michigan. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Art. Hi. Thank you for having me on the air with you.
Oh, happy to have you. Where are you in Michigan, John?
Well, I'm in the northern lower peninsula, not far from Traverse City. Actually, northeast of Traverse City by about 38 miles.
Okay. How old are you now?
Right now I'm... That's a good question. I think I'm 46.
46.
Getting up there anyway.
46. All right. You began all this when you were how old?
Well, now that's... I'm even thinking back to the beginning of when I first was in kindergarten and got kicked out of kindergarten.
Why?
That's because... Oftentimes, I would leave the classroom. I got bored in kindergarten, and I would end up going down to the boiler room in the school building, which was on the southeast side of Detroit where I lived. And I would go down there and talk with the guys that run the boilers. And they would show me the sight glasses and let me peer inside of them and see them working. And I got real interested in that sort of thing, mechanical things, electrical things.
Machinery.
Machinery. Exactly. And that drove the teachers nuts. There'd be a fire drill. They couldn't find me.
Yeah, there you were down with the boilers.
Right where the fire would probably break out first, of course.
Yeah, I had similar beginnings, John. I was tearing my mom's appliances apart, that kind of thing. Very bored with the school as well, so we share that. I have a feeling we share a lot here.
Yes, I sense this, too. It's fascinating, you know. We have a natural interest in these in electrical things, or the energy and how it works and how it affects things.
Mm-hmm.
Does things.
Yeah, that resulted in my tearing them apart when I was very young. Cutting things up, disassembling them, I got in more trouble.
Oh, man, I've got a list of trouble here I did when I was young like that.
Well, anyway, look, around skipping ahead from kindergarten, I mean, this business of beginning to try to attract UFOs, and a lot of people out there would say you ought to be really careful what you wish for or try to achieve, but why did it begin? How did it begin?
That's a good question. I started out after all this, past the kindergarten stage and on into the 60s. We're talking early 60s, mid 60s now.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by programs like The Outer Limits, Forbidden Planet, and The Day the Earth Stood Still.
All favorites of mine.
Yes, very powerful, very influential kind of thing. Things like TV had never really seen before. They were kind of almost a whole new creative genre or release of ideas. And especially Outer Limits being a series, it was every week there was something different on there. And the one that I remember most clearly that started me off on this track a little bit, I think, was The Galaxy Beam, the first pilot episode. That was something. And with that, I was off. That had my imagination just going like crazy. And you remember that episode, this guy that worked at a radio station was in the transmitter building and had his own little setup there. He was...
You know what? I don't remember it yet, so go ahead.
Yeah, he had his own radio setup at the transmitter where he could broadcast programs. Not music per se, but he was broadcasting like codes and information out into space, trying to contact a distant star system. And
uh-huh.
in this segment, he established contact, and he had like a very neat special effect. They had this like glass box where it looked like they were superimposing or projecting oscilloscope images, Lissajous figures, this kind of thing,
uh-huh.
on this glass, and this being would kind of fade in and appear inherent in this glass chamber. And it was like it almost reminds you of what would now be a hologram by today's standards. Way back then.
I missed that. How could I have missed that?
Oh, it's a wonderful segment. It is brilliant. If you ever get a chance, you'll want to check it out. It fired my imagination so much.
All right. You must have been, what, a teen at that point, or how old?
Oh, boy. Since I was born in 51, let me think, probably between 12 and 16, probably.
Very impressionable age.
Yes, very. And, of course, there was our first flying saucers. There was all this other stuff about, alien visitors of one form or another. And that really was fun. I mean, I had my imagination going. But what really gelled it, okay, were the Dexter Ann Arbor sightings in the mid-60s. That was... the final straw. That really got interesting for me.
Those were particularly interesting sightings, and I briefly looked before I went on the air because I have a tape of some air traffic people talking about them, all kinds of confirmation, the guy sitting in front of the radar screen talking about it. I've got all of that on tape.
Oh, fascinating.
Oh, yes, it is.
Because I heard a lot of this through WJR radio when I was living in the southeast side there in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, I was glued to that radio. I it was mysterious. I was hearing these incredible stories about this object that sat down in a farmer's field that was like a large oval shape and had a quilted surface to it. And the farmer that owned the field and his son went out there to look at it. Didn't get very close to the point where son said something like, "Look at that awful thing." And it started to glow, and it lifted off the ground and took off. And it was really just had me entranced. I have no other words for it. And something unusual happened shortly thereafter. Because I was so fascinated with these sightings, I spent nights outside watching with I had a Tasco 10-power handheld spotting scope, nothing fancy. I would sit out there evenings and watch the skies. See lots of planes go over, you know, the regular kind of thing.
Sure.
And one night I experienced something that to this day still remains pretty much unexplained. in my mind. And I even ended up with a witness to it, which is even stranger. It was about 9 p.m., and I'm thinking it's approximately 4 to 10 days after these first batch of sightings. And, you know, I was out there for night after night, nothing. And then this one night, I watched what looked like a star moving across the sky relatively slowly. It had no flashing lights on it or anything like that, but it was about the first magnitude brightness. It was quite bright. It almost looked like Venus, how bright Venus is.
Right.
Quite clearly visible and moving. And it was moving from the west basically to the east, from where I remember living in that the sunset and all that. And I watched this thing. I put my back up to the house and lined it up between power lines that were running overhead to make sure I wasn't moving and make
sure
a mistake here with it. And I watched that thing, and sure enough, it was moving. It moved to a point of about a 45-degree angle to my viewing point. And at that point, I could just see what looked like a speck of light drop out of it. Just there was no doors opened or anything like that, but I saw a speck of light. That's the best description I can give. Just appear from it and just descend very slowly down towards the city skyline. The object continued on overhead until I couldn't see anymore. The other object that descended got to the point where you couldn't see it because of the light from the city. It got down into the lit area, and you couldn't see it anymore. Now, that was kind of strange. I thought, boy, that's weird. Why would an airplane drop something out of it like that? You know, I was thinking these kind of things. I thought, boy, that's really fascinating.
Sure.
Well, here's what makes it even stranger for me, and, again, I'll have to tell some more, was I knew this lady who babysitted for a neighbor right next to me, and I used to talk with her about just all kinds of stuff, just anything, you know, stuff that kids talk about or younger people.
Sure.
And she worked at a hamburger stand just up about a block from the house. And I went up there the next morning, and I went in, and I said, I saw the strangest thing last night. And I started to describe it to her, and she looked at me really just straight in the face, and she says, she almost turned white. She says, I don't believe it. She says, I was in my apartment, I'm about two stories up, I'm making a sandwich, about 9:15 at this time, and I'm making a sandwich, and I look out the window, and I see what looks like a baseball-sized ball of light, like a plasma or a ball of light descending very gradually, slowly down towards the ground. I look out the window, it gets near the ground and fades away, just dissipates. And at that point, I was just floored. I didn't know what to make of it.
You had a witness.
Yes. At that time, I had a witness.
Well, John, what happens is these things change you forever. I've had one sighting, one, and it occurred for me late in my life.
Oh, man.
And I'll never be the same. And I think it is, to some degree, driving me toward an investigation of this sort of thing. You're driven. Once you've seen what I saw, John, wasn't indistinct, wasn't a light. It was a triangle. It came directly above me. My wife was with me. We both saw it. There was no question about it. Next thing to a close encounter of the third kind, totally inexplicable, and it changed me. And although it didn't change me apparently as much, well, maybe it did in its own way. But what happened to you really changed you, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It got me started down this path of exploring and trying in my own best efforts with what limited funds I had to go out and try to open some doors to these questions, to get some answers, to look in deeper. And it's drive, a very strong compulsion.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back to you, and we'll find out what that compulsion led to. And if you want to see what that compulsion led to, and believe me, it's something to see. It's on my website now. If you've got a computer, www.artbell.com, go look at the Strat photographs. If you don't have a computer, it'll be inside an upcoming newsletter. Be right back.
This is TRN and CBC, Talk Radio Network and Chancellor Broadcasting Company, home of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is, and my guest is John Shepherd. He is an amazing individual, and if you want to see what he's done, go to my website now and take a look at the Project Strat photographs and what John has done to his home. It's like, it really is like the Twilight Zone or any of the other movies we were talking about. It's unbelievable, and we'll begin describing it for you shortly. All right. Back now to Michigan and John Shepherd. John, you've been on television with all of this, haven't you?
Yes, on quite a few different programs over the years, and interviewed by not only local TV, but national TV, PM Magazine, Look at Us with Richard Crenna, which really originally was filmed for real people, but they moved it over to a new series that they started called Look at Us,
mm-hmm.
George Slatter Productions. And now there's many more things in the works. Seems like most recently Turner Broadcasting will be carrying a segment featuring a lot of my work called Searching for UFOs. And they're talking a tentative date of June 29th.
Well, I have a lot of friends at Strange Universe. And hard copy, and I would think they would both be very, very interested. They're such visual mediums, and you have so much to offer visually, that I would think they'd be very interested in taking a look at what you've done there, John. And that's what we're going to get to. Again, the word compulsion or obsession comes to mind. And so you had a sighting very much like the one I had, and then begins the compulsion. Mine, perhaps expressed here on the radio. Yours, though, started to take a different direction. You somehow, in your mind, you decided, I guess, that you were going to try and do what? Contact UFOs, or try and actually bring one to you, or what were you trying to do?
That's basically it. I was trying to contact them, and a UFO or object, intelligence, whatever you want to call it, and bring it in, home it in, get it close enough to where instruments could pick up electromagnetic fields, radiation, and or be able to photograph it, visually observe it, and so forth. I didn't go with the idea that I'd make contact in the sense of a communication. I went with the idea of, can I attract their attention? Can I lure them in? Can I get them close enough where they can be photographed, observed, or check them out more closely in a little better detail.
All right. Aside from this incredible amount of equipment that you have amassed to do this job, I guess I'm kind of curious. Well, you did attract them once, didn't you? You actually had some come down close by.
Yes.
While you were transmitting, what I wanted to ask though, John, is, my God, we've got, you know, I'm on 328 radio stations or something right now, and there's RF going out all over from the planet, FM, AM, television, CB, hams, you name it. The spectrum is just buzzing with RF. Why do you think John Shepherd's RF would particularly be heard or recognized by a UFO instead of all this other spurious stuff?
Well, that's a very good question, and even I've thought about that. I myself have wondered that same thing. Is it just sheer coincidence, or was there something maybe that was just a little different about it, like the frequency, which that was one of the reasons I chose the lower bands, besides FCC regulations, et cetera, was the interesting and curious thing that has been reported for many years and related to UFO sightings was that they were able to home in on the power lines day or night and locate the power lines and attach themselves to it or draw energy from them.
They were attracted to the 60 hertz power lines.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, so that is a strong point in why I chose this general frequency range. But I thought if I expanded on it a little bit and varied it enough, I started out by broadcasting tone burst pulses, or tones, just a multitude of tones, 24 hours a day, over and over again. Then I got into broadcasting nature sounds, like songs of the humpback whale, things like this. And it wasn't more than a year after that I decided to go with music. Music was a powerful thing in my life. So I thought, well, music, of course. You know, it's pretty universal, even here. It crosses borders, and people still can, you know, make head or tails of it. They can make something from it or enjoy it or get something out of it.
All right, for the technical, you are broadcasting between what frequencies are you on?
Okay, it's what it is. It's basically the audio frequency from 40 hertz to 25 kilohertz is really very maximum top end that can squeeze out of this clip, and then the efficiency drops off so dramatically that might as well forget it. So really, it's very long wave. It's very low in frequency, and by standard radio theory, requires an antenna hundreds of miles long, you know, or at those lower frequencies.
Exactly.
That is standard radio theory, and I don't dismiss it in any way. But what I did attempt to do here was try to make up or compensate somewhat for that fact by increasing the potential emitted electrical field by increasing the voltage very, very high and using what I had for space and antennas to try to send the signal out. By increasing the potential of the dipoles, the signal is fed to that, to 60 or 100,000 volts, you get an impedance match, a better match, kind of like Nikola Tesla was doing, where he increased the voltage so much that it coupled with the air. It had become a better impedance match that way.
All right, there is a photograph on the website with you standing there and a large antenna in the background that apparently is perched on a tower. And ever since I've seen that, I've been, what is that?
Okay, that's the main transmitter tower. That is the one that I broadcast the cultural and creative music program from. It's been modified somewhat since then. It has two large 10-foot-long dipoles. And there's a reflector that helps increase the bounce or the reflection of the signal back up into space. I've noticed there's a tremendous ground wave reflection, like it bounces. There's a point where you can detect it, and it reverses its phase when you're measuring the signal's intensity. So there's also a ground wave that sets up with the ground. It's about 18 feet above the ground,
mm-hmm.
And the signal from that antenna element there is reflected like on the antenna itself, on the reflector, and on the ground, and it goes back up. One time, and I've never tried it in a plane, that's the one thing I thought about, or wish I had the use of the space shuttle for this, it would be awesome. But anyway, we did try a cherry picker bucket and went way up about 80 feet above this thing, and the signal was just phenomenally loud, very intense, much more intense than even the side field or peripheral radiation given off by the antenna at ground level. It was, and Lee, unless you were very, very close to it, it was interesting. There was a stronger irradiated signal in the vertical plane. So theory, you know, to some degree.
What do you listen to this on? What can you hear it on?
Okay, what you can hear it on is basically in the simplest terms, a friend and I designed and built a wideband amplifier detector. It's a non-tuned receiver. This is one of the devices we use. I have a tuned one as well, but it uses 741 op-amps, a dual pair of those.
Right.
And it has, the gain is cranked up way high on this. We're using an open-end antenna, basically, on this. You can put different types of antennas on it, plug them in, different types of pickups, magnetic and open circuit. And with a foot-long antenna on that thing, it just blows your ears out. You know, if you're standing 30 feet from that tower, it just blows you away. You have to turn it way down the gain.
Is there not some, you're running, how much now power, 1,000 watts?
Yeah, 1,000 watts.
My God, that's a lot of power at that frequency. Now, isn't there some biological danger of that kind of power at that frequency?
You know, that's a question I've had asked so many times. That's an interesting question, and I'm fascinated by it. Now, I've watched in the mirror. Every morning I get up, I check to see if there's a third eye developing in the center of my head or any other strange mutation. But actually, I don't feel any ill effects yet. I've been around this stuff for 20 years or better, you know, around these electromagnetic fields, and especially in the accelerator lab here where we've got these two-story high machines that put out nearly the same potential as that antenna, and they're right inside of a room in the house.
Well, that brings another incredible photograph to mind that I've got to ask you about. You apparently knocked out a floor of your house in order to build this great vertical apparatus.
Right.
What in the hell is that?
Okay, let me give you a little background on that. That is basically what we did. We built a room onto the house, a 38 by 16 extension or addition to the house that's all shielded. It's got shielding in the walls and a grid under the floor and so on and so forth.
Are you married, Dan?
No, at present I've got a relationship, but I'm pretty much just a single guy doing what I do.
Okay, when all this began, you were living with your parents, weren't you?
Grandparents.
Grandparents.
Right.
Are you now alone? Are they still there? Or have they passed on?
Yes, they passed on. My grandfather passed on in January of 1980, and my grandmother about six to eight years later, if I recall correctly, she passed on. So really what happened there was my grandmother and I, after my grandfather passed on, decided to put our savings, our life savings, hers and mine, into this addition to the house.
I can imagine it would take that. At minimum.
It did. It took everything we pretty much had. And I had a little bit of money left over to invest and trade stocks with and things like that to keep it going. And that's about all it did.
But, I mean, there must have been a moment when you had a conversation with and you sat down and you said, Grandma, I need to build an addition onto the house to build all this equipment so we can contact UFOs. Now, what did your grandma say?
Actually, my grandma was very in favor of it. She even suggested it in a way. She had a very strong interest in these types of things. And she had almost a natural psychic ability. She surprised me a couple of times, really, really seriously surprised me. And I didn't know she had this ability. This wasn't something like she would talk about or anything very often. But she saw one time, almost like or similar to remote viewing, she had an experience with a lady that, okay, this gal was the wife of the manager and owner of the Antrim County Airport at the time. And she came over to the house, and she was troubled by something. She asked my grandma about it, and I can remember my grandma detailing an incredible detail about an aileron that wasn't the cable or something controlling the aileron in this plane that was on the ground wasn't right for some reason. And she detailed this for her because she was worried about it, okay? She went back to the airport, this lady, and she checked this plane, and sure enough, there was a problem with that aileron.
So your grandma was kind of psychic.
Right.
All right. Well, anyway, so you sat down and you proposed, Grandma, your life savings, my life savings, we're going to convert them into this grand project to try and attract UFOs. And she went for it.
She went for it. She had seen one before this, long before this.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, so again, referring to this photograph, what in God's name is all of this?
Okay, you're looking. Now you're talking about the one where I'm standing down in the lower level of the accelerator lab. I'm sure.
An accelerator lab. Okay.
For sure.
Okay. All right. It's gigantic. Whatever it is, it towers way, way above you.
18 feet 6 inches.
Yeah. What is it?
It's easily described as a giant tank circuit. And the easiest way I can describe it in radio jargon, if you like, the final output stage or the stage just before you're coupled to the antenna.
Okay.
It's an array of capacitors, resonator plates that work together with capacitors to create. You don't get a tuned notch in these frequencies. You tend to get an efficiency range or a hump. That's the best way to describe it. You don't get such a thing as a perfectly tuned, real tight spike.
Right.
If you do, then you've limited your frequency to that range, and that's it. Here, you kind of got to, you either got to approach it on the shotgun effect, or you've got to go with a spread spectrum.
So you want something broader.
Right. And still have some degree of efficiency. But because of the frequencies, of course, physically, everything is bigger.
Gigantic, actually.
Yes.
Down in the Hertz range. Gigantic.
Huge. And the voltages operating here, as high as 150 kilovolts.
Wow.
The physical separation of the equipment is absolutely essential. You find yourself blowing things up real quick.
Have you blown many up?
Yes. There was a really interesting experience a few years back. I would say about 4 years ago, during the testing phase of this new capacitor bank that's in this picture.
Uh-huh.
There are glass plates in there that I got scrunched from a glass plate company and from some old TV sets.
Uh-huh.
I polished them up real good, and they're about a quarter inch thick. And they're 24 by 20. And I put screen on each side of these glass plates, okay? Ordinary screen, cut it to size to tune it, to give it a tuning range.
Mm-hmm.
And these plates were hooked up as capacitors in the circuit.
Right.
Okay. Well, everything was working fine. I was testing it. Imagine that there's 2 inches of space between the edge of the screen and the edge of the glass on each side. Okay, so you're talking...
A lot of airspace there, yeah.
Yes. And what happened was we were running it. I pushed the voltage up to about 85,000 volts potential between those two plates. And all of a sudden, when I won these tests, a blue plasma... arc started. Very bright, very intense, very loud. And it was a matter of maybe 3 seconds, and that glass exploded. It went all over the lab. There were fragments everywhere. Very loud, very percussive kind of explosion. Heaven's sakes, if my neighbors would have heard that, they probably would have thrown me out of the neighborhood.
That's a separate topic, by the way. How do you survive with your neighbors?
Well, with all the incredible land restrictions and things that are going on these days, it's a miracle that we've got some retired folks that are far enough away that either their hearing isn't real good or they don't really worry about it a whole lot. I've been lucky. I've been very lucky.
But they must have seen the publicity of what you've got there.
Yes, they have. As a matter of fact, here's an interesting story related to that, a brief one, where... when I first started doing this stuff, before the room was added on, and there was equipment creeping out into the dining room of the house, in the living room, one of the neighbors stopped over, and he was a farmer kind of guy, and he looks around, you know, and he looks at my grandma and grandpa and the equipment, and was he into some kind of radio or something? He's looking at this, he can't quite figure it out. There's racks, floor to ceiling, of course, full of instruments.
And there is a photograph on the website of your grandma and grandpa with you there. It looks like you've already absorbed half the living room to me.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And they're kind of, they got one side, the TV's got the other side, and the equipment's got the rest. It's pretty much that's what it is. And there was even lab equipment and microscopes and other things in the entryway between the living room and dining room.
I mean, surely people would come over and ask your grandparents whether you had lost your mind, or whether they had lost theirs, or worried about an explosion, or... I mean, when you look at all of this equipment, John, to be honest with you, because of, I understand, the frequencies you're working with, everything is so gigantic that, I mean, to the average person, John, it looks like a madman's laboratory.
Oh, yeah. That's probably, in an abstract sense, I suppose that's where the aspect of art, where this idea of it being an art form came in, kind of. And totally coincidental to the fact that I've always had a creative spirit to build things and work with my hands. But when people see this stuff, now here's a good example. Not too long ago, just after this edition was put on, there was a couple of had a car problem out front.
All right, John. we're going to hold on to this until we get back from the top of the hour, all right?
Sure.
Everybody, you've got to see this. Trust me when I tell you. Go to my webpage and look at what's there. Project Strat at www.artbell.com.
Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Calls on the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Well, all right, my guest is John Shepherd. John has built what it is very difficult to describe. He has converted his house in Michigan into this gigantic transmitter, this ultra-low-frequency transmitter designed to attract UFOs. It really is hard in words to describe what he has done. The photographs are on my website. What I would like to do when I begin to take calls here shortly is take calls from those of you who have seen the photographs. So if everybody else would hold off a little bit, and if you have been fortunate enough to have been to my website and seen the photographs, you will understand the magnitude of what John has done. Or maybe you've seen him on TV or have seen newspaper articles showing these photographs. He convinced his grandmother to invest her entire life savings, along with his entire life savings, and they converted their entire house into a transmitter. It's incredible. And we're discussing various aspects of it right now. But I would like to restrict the lines to those who have seen the photographs for now. So if you would be so kind, everybody just sort of hold off on the phones unless you have actually seen the photographs. And we'll begin to get calls here shortly. All right, John Shepherd is in Michigan. He's trying to attract UFOs. He noticed that UFOs appear to be attracted to power lines, and that has long, of course, been the case. And so he decided to transmit incredibly high-powered signals down in the hertz range, around 40 hertz in that area. And in doing so, he has converted his home there, which was, I guess, his grandparents' home, into one magungus transmitter, the size of which you can only understand if you have seen the photographs on my website. And I heartily recommend it. And I am restricting calls in the beginning to those who have seen this, because you've got to see it to believe it, actually. So if you want to call in, please try and view the photographs first. If not, just sit back and listen, and you'll get a sense by, I'm sure, what the audience says of the magnitude of what we're talking about. John, how much money have you spent on all this?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, over all the years we've done this, it would be easy to pretty realistic, I think, to say between $30,000 and $60,000. A lot of it was handmade, hand built, pieces made, and my grandfather was a tool and die maker, so he taught me machine shop. So I was able to machine and make from raw material a lot of the components and parts, taking many years, of course, but saving many thousands of dollars in costs that would normally be prohibitive.
All right, so here's this giant room with what is a final tank circuit, and that is the circuit just before you go to the antenna, folks, that literally takes not one floor, but it goes up. I'm trying to think of what to compare it to visually. It's like a scene out of Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
Actually. Now, you remember when they were in the power grid portion in Forbidden Planet? That's what it reminds me of. And then below this, I've got a photograph of you in what appears to be the high voltage section. I'm not sure. It's a black and white photograph, John. And it says danger, high voltage there. What am I looking at? This looks absolutely incredible.
Okay, you're looking at the upper story, upper level of the lab, where the final output point is to the antenna, through the ceiling of the room. There's a 75 kilovolt cable that goes to the tower from the ceiling there. And that's the top side of the transmitter, the output side.
I mean, to me, this puts a lot of power stations that you see that power cities to shame, and you have the, everything connected to everything here, and I wish that I fully understood exactly what I'm looking at. Is this the actual coupling to the antenna?
Yes. Matter of fact, if you look directly above my head in that photograph, you can see a black column going horizontally, diagonally, horizontally across to a spherical.
That's
like
right.
Reflector sphere.
That's right.
And that's the coupling, and that goes through a heavy-duty, high-voltage insulated bushing.
Holy mackerel.
Through the ceiling to high-voltage transmission cable, which then finally goes out the eaves of the house and up to one tower out front here. And we use power cable that they use for underground high-voltage cable, 75 kilovolt rating cable to run this thing.
I'm surprised you've never set your house on fire.
Oh, God, insurance companies would love it. Actually, they'd hate it. No, that hasn't been a problem. I've been very careful about how I wire everything and how I insulate it and isolate it from flammable surfaces.
Well, I can clearly see the craftsmanship here is superb. I mean, it's absolutely superb. I really would love to see all this in person.
I wish you could, Art. I would love to have you come out and spend some time here in beautiful Michigan and look at this.
You develop how much voltage to power this now again?
Okay, between the two potential sides of the circuit, since it's basically single phase, but you've got 180 degrees difference between your signal, your output stages in the system. So it's high as 150 kilovolts. By that time, though, when you're running at that high a voltage, you can hear and feel it in the air around you, and you can smell the ozone. That room. We got big ventilator fans that had to add to the room to reduce the ozone concentration. Yeah.
I'm sure that's true. And you're broadcasting from 40 to 1,000 hertz, is that about right? Or
actually, efficiently, between 40 hertz is a good, it's really good on the low end at 40 hertz. It tapers off as you go above about 800, 1,000 hertz, but we still push it to about 12 kilohertz. So we really push it at 12. Things get warm at 12.
I can imagine they do. Was all of this operating when your grandma was alive?
She got to see the first... she was here during the filming for Look at Us with Richard Crenna for that TV segment. And
uh-huh.
At that time, the station was just coming together and going on the air full power. So she did get to see this dream realized, and she was very happy. She truly enjoyed it. She felt that it was a worthwhile effort to try to discover what these things were and to look into them deeper.
What about John Shepard and the FCC? Does the Federal Communications Commission rule in the area in which you transmit?
Well, they didn't used to. If I recall correctly from what I have read, And this is kind of what I based it on. Oh, now maybe they changed the rules then. They haven't notified me of the fact, but maybe they will after tonight. But at the time that I did this, I started this, there was like, I think it was up to 14.4 or 24.4 kilohertz that was pretty much unregulated, unlicensed, experimental frequencies. They were pretty open down there because nobody used them for anything. They weren't commercially viable, basically. They weren't used for, except now that they've got had Project ELF and some of these other projects for submarine communication. There had been no real use for that frequency, as far as I was aware. And obviously, there's no interference, or by now they would have said something. We haven't caused any problems with local reception or anything like that by being this low in frequency.
You're not interfering with anybody's submarine communications?
Not that I know of. I've been watching the lakefront out here to see if a submarine ever pulls up out front here.
Uh-huh.
If they do, then I know we've made a boo-boo.
Do you have collaborators and friends who help you with this, or are you all on your own?
Well, I'd like to take that back a few years so I can kind of bring that into a better focus.
All right.
Okay. In the early 60s, when I first got into all this electrical stuff, in the early to mid-60s, my grandfather was interested in what I did, and he was a tool and die maker, but he had a fascination with automotive coils and relays and basic things like that. He wasn't real electronically minded, but he had an extremely good knowledge of mechanics, so he was able to build things that I kind of asked him to build, like if I needed a rotating spark gap device, he could make it on the lathe and machine it, and he taught me, of course, the same thing. But I started out pretty much with building these things, experimenting with stuff I used to find in the alleys of Detroit. I used to roam the alleys looking for old radios, old TVs, anything I could find because I didn't have any real money. An allowance was $2 a week back then, so you didn't go out and buy much, and there wasn't even really a Radio Shack.
Sure.
So anyway, I started out on that kind of a level with it, and it wasn't long before I was really able to put those components together. Best way to describe it is I got a feel for the electrical properties of things and how electricity behaved. I didn't have it written down in formulas. I didn't have the math to do that. But I had a feel for it. And I could put these things together and get certain results. Sometimes there were some rather amusing moments where there'd be an explosion and a pretty black hole in the carpet. My grandpa, a number of times, gave me a reprieve from such efforts. And then I would come back and try it again, and usually either with the result of a much larger explosion and a bigger hole or a breakthrough. And that's how it all kind of got going. And then moving forward a little now into the mid-70s, I still do to this day have a very good friend by the name of Mike Johnston, who you probably may have faxed you one time. He is an artist, a creative person, very, very interesting person. He and I grew up together, okay? His dad has a cottage next door to this place where I live now with the lab.
Okay.
And it started out back in about, I think, 72 or 73, just shortly after this station went on the air. I used to go out with this spotting scope. I had the same 10-power spotting scope that I saw the object with. And I just go out and look at stuff and play around. I was just having fun. And one day they were over next door in the fall burning leaves. And I just sat down behind a pile of leaves here that were in our yard, and I watched through the spotting scope, and I saw Mike. He was young then too, about my age, actually a little younger. And I would see him through the heat waves, and I was kind of just watching him and checking out the neighbors, you know, didn't really know them. And I got brave enough to the point where I actually walked over and said hello, and I told him what I was doing. And at that point, he just seemed to be fascinated, and we struck up a great friendship, just a fantastic friendship. And ever since that time, we've shared a lot of inspiration, ideas, and things related to a lot of the same areas.
So he's helped you out. He's helped you.
Yes. In the sense of a very powerful kind of very, a very level-headed and down-to-earth kind of person. He has his feet on the ground, maybe a little firmer than I do, because I tend to get more abstract and more out on concepts and ideas and maybe the art of it or whatever, the far-out concepts of it, where he does that too, but he has his feet maybe rooted a little firmer on terra firma. But his influence got me into music, basically, got my interest in creative music. I mean, things that are not so really commercial per se, but are truly, truly artistic expressions that the individual artist expresses himself through, you know, and in music.
Well, you remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
The communication with the saucer in that movie was with musical tones.
Correct.
And there is a mathematic precision, of course, to music. So it does make sense, I suppose, particularly in view of the fact that UFOs appear to be attracted to these very low frequencies, as evidenced by 60 hertz, which is the frequency of the transmission lines, electricity in this country, AC.
Okay.
So it makes sense, I guess, to me, that you're doing what you're doing. Have you ever, in your opinion, actually brought a UFO down?
In my opinion, and I stress that it's circumstantial, I make no claims that I've actually done it, but I would say that the circumstantial indications are that there have been a number of times when in 73 and even in 72 when these things were attracted to the signals we were sending out. Something, it appeared that they were. I want to stress that. They appeared that they were.
Is there any difference between what you were sending then and what you're sending now?
Yes, quite a degree of difference. At that time, of course, the only transmitter on the air was the 150-watt VMB, vertical marker beacon, and that was just basically I had an amplifier wired up that would feed back on itself and would pulse and modulate, make all kinds of racket. That was the best way to describe it.
Huh.
And then after I got that refined to the point where I could control that racket and actually get exact tones or pulses and given time sequences, then I had a tone pulse transmitter. And that signal was what I started with. And then we added, about a year later, I added this song for Humpback Whale and then music from the group Soft Machine, which was a rather interesting kind of almost fusion, electronic jazz group. And then things just kept going on from there, and I got more and more involved in creating even my own music and signals to send out. And by nature, was artistically inclined. He had a real strong interest in these areas, music and so forth, and we often played together and created our own music, and even in live settings, recorded it, then brought it back and aired it. So it was kind of like a real grassroots, create your own radio program, radio station thing.
Yep. All right. I've got a couple of people who would like to say hello to you.
Sure.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Shepherd. Hello?
Yes, hi. Frank in Seattle.
Seattle, yes. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, hi,
hello,
John. Myself, I'm also an amateur radio operator here. I don't know, is John an ham operator?
I had considered becoming one. I came real close. I wish now. I may still do it. I am considering it again. I would love to become a ham radio operator, fully licensed, etc.
You've seen the photographs, caller?
Okay, yes. I have them on my web. I see them all, antenna, and his room where he has a lot of electronic equipment. I see his grandfather and his grandmother there.
Yeah.
And also, I guess that, was that 18 or so feet tall with all that equipment and things in there? And
yes, that's correct. About 18 feet, 6 inches tall. That room has modular flooring in it, steel frame floors that you can adjust or remove entire sections of so you can accommodate such large equipment.
And then I see the high voltage part of it, got the part there too that goes up to the antenna, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see all that type of thing. You know, I was wondering too, Art, you know, this HARP project is supposed to come up in a few days.
Yep.
And as far as the frequencies go, the monitoring those.
Yes.
And I was wondering if John might be interested in trying to pick up some of that from the HARP project up in Alaska.
Well, that would be a receiving job, of course. But, John, I presume you have heard of HARP.
Yes.
And, you know, it's going to be dealing with some very low frequencies, in fact, even lower than the ones you're fooling with right now, that are thought to be very close to our brain's operating frequency.
Yes, very, very, very concerned and very interested at the same time in this. And I will be doing some serious efforts toward monitoring this activity. Now, you mentioned not only on your webpage, but on your program the other night about the frequencies and that they'll actually be issuing a card. That's rather fascinating. But most of those frequencies that were given were in the, I think it was 6.99 or 9.
Yeah, 3.44 megacycles or something, megahertz, and 6.99, something like that.
Right.
But eventually they're going to be fooling with very, very low frequencies. And yours are pretty low, and that's why I asked you about the biological effects. You're running awfully high power on very low frequencies, and I really would be concerned for some sort of biohazard connected with this. But you tell me you have no third eye yet, and
right. It is interesting though that I have felt some unusual in one case. I will say there is one case where.
All right, hold the case. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back and discuss that in a moment. One case where something happened. We'll find out.
This is TRN and CBC, Talk Radio Network and Chancellor Broadcasting Company, home of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Hi, I'm Art Bell. Survey says people love it, and I think you will too. We don't do your cookie-cutter style talk radio. We don't sit here and bash for hours on end. Instead, we explore interesting, intriguing, strange, even bizarre topics. And I'll tell you what, it's a lot of fun, it's different, and it's right here in the middle of the night.
Art Bell interviews Dr. John Holland, president of Hair Incorporated and Psychokinesis. That's this weekend on Dreamland. This is Art Bell. If human beings only use a small portion of our brains, what makes us think we know it all? Just because we can't prove it yet does not mean it may not be so. Dreamland. West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
And the story we're doing is that of a very, very, very interesting man named John Shepherd. And I'm not sure we should be doing it on radio. This probably is a story for television because of the visual aspect of it. Now, I know that not all of you, by a long shot, have computers and can see the photographs that we've got up on the website. I've intentionally had them there for several days so that you could see the magnitude of what it is we're talking about. As a matter of fact, a faxer here says it quite well. Art, the photographs on your webpage are a must. The visual provided brings his efforts alive. This is more than obsession. It's dedication, genius at work. That's Daryl in Rancho Mirage. And I absolutely agree with that. John has converted his entire house to a ultra-low-frequency transmitter in the 40 hertz range, running about 1,000 watts, which is a lot of power at that frequency, extremely high voltage. And it looks like the wildest lab that you've ever seen in your whole life. John looks a little eccentric, perhaps, but sounds and otherwise looks quite normal. And He's trying to attract UFOs with these ultra-low frequencies. And again, I would ask that only those of you that have seen the photographs call, so the audience can get a sense of what it is we're talking about. Because without this visual, it's hard to imagine, frankly. Incidentally, Christy Brinkley was just a guest, I guess, tonight on the Jay Leno show. And it seems Christy Brinkley just had a UFO encounter of some sort with which the FBI became involved. Yes, the FBI. All right, back now to John Shepherd. John?
Yes.
In Michigan. Again, a lot of people who want to talk to you. John, what would you say to the people of America about what you're doing?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd express that I'm just an individual who had a curiosity about things that maybe reached beyond the normal realms, and I followed that curiosity up by actually dedicating and putting forth the effort, time, and money to try to better understand it, to get a better handle on it. And a strong, what can I say, I had an experience when I was younger that influenced me for the rest of my life, that set me on a course creatively, inspirationally, and technically to try to get a better look at this fascinating subject. And ever since, I have not lost my enthusiasm for searching out that mystery.
What are you going to do with this house when you pass on? I mean, should it become a museum?
That's a thought I've had. That has been one of the thoughts. A lot of things have been going on. Due to the economics of all this, just to put it in a quick nutshell, I've had to place the house and the project up for sale. And it may be a situation where it may be sold to someone. It's hard to say. Nothing's happened yet. It's just in the works. And that was one of the interesting highlights of trying to do this kind of thing is, you know, you think you can pretty much do just about anything with what you have, but you realize how expensive it really is.
Out of curiosity, what would any buyer do with this?
I would imagine it would be a situation where either the person would have to have the kind of eccentric degree of interest in electronics or in the UFO phenomena, or it's say a movie company or somebody that would want this for some use like that, for filming or for studio or whatever.
Yeah, I can understand. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with John Shepherd in Michigan. Hello.
Yes, my name is Jack.
Hi, Jack, where are you?
Okay, I'm in a little town called Jacksboro, Tennessee.
All right.
And KC4 PWE is
called. You're a ham, all right.
I've tinkered around with. Right now I'm in the process of building one of Wayne Green's bioelectrifiers.
Yes, oh yes.
So, anyway, I got a question for John. Some information I run up on, several months back, a fella had built a thing he called a Stellatron. His name was Dr. L.G. Lawrence, and he's the president of the E. coli Institute of San Bernardino, California, a research institute. Are you familiar with him, John?
No, matter of fact.
Nor am I.
This would be the first time.
Okay, what this Stellatron thing is that he built is it picks up the bio senses off a plant, like when you play music on a flower, or is telling how the flower reacts to it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this Stellatron is, and he's took all kinds of different readings off a plant. And in the article, in the commentary that I've seen about this, he talked about being able to point this Stellatron up into the sky and pick up all kinds of different types of signals. And this is the only person I've ever heard of that's using any kind of instruments of this type to get any kind of readings off of any. He didn't say
What did you think of the photographs of what John has done?
Well, it was amazing, some of the rays he built there, especially the one that was about 18 foot tall, that one addition, that additional room that he had.
All right, it brings up an interesting question. John, how do things grow around your house? Do they grow normally?
Yes, they do. I see, as far as plants or animals, as a matter of fact, there's a raccoon just outside the studio right now walking around. It doesn't seem to have any effect. There doesn't appear to be any real variation that I can determine, visually at least.
Because the man is right. Plants, you know, the old thing about you sing to them and they grow better and all of that. I would imagine these kinds of frequencies would affect growing things. The best, it's just a guess. There's certainly a lot of research going on now indicating that 60 hertz or power lines may be even carcinogenic.
I've heard this, and I've been reading this same research with a close eye.
I'm sure.
I think since it stays centered on that frequency, too, may be a cumulative effect where this sweeps, the frequency keeps changing with the signal modulating it. It doesn't stay fixed on a given frequency.
True.
So you're not exposed to that same resonation or energy frequency bombarding your cells all the time. It's changing constantly. It's more like a natural background kind of signal would be.
Wild card line, you're on the air with John Shepherd in Michigan. Hi. Hello.
This is Charlotte.
Hello, Charlotte. How are you?
This is in California.
Yes.
And talking to the gentleman in Michigan, I'm a contractor, an electrician, plumber, and carpenter. And I can freely say that there may be all kinds of energy that will come off of lines that are not grounded. If they're properly grounded, then there are other things that can happen, which I've experienced myself. But I don't think that I can help him with his problem. I'm just a carpenter, electrician, a general contractor.
Well, then, why?
A lot about electricity.
Uh-huh. All right, well, I appreciate your call, then, if you have nothing to comment on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Shepherd. Hello.
Hi, Art. It's Martin calling from just south of L.A., Lower Akron.
Hello, Martin.
And I got two questions about the UFO phenomenon for John. But first off, his life sort of reminds me a lot of my own, and I noticed he mentioned he was into... That sounds like a prog rock hit, progressive rock, and alternative music. Can you tell me, elaborate on some of the stuff that influenced him in his music?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can. Starting out early, a lot of the music was things like...
You mentioned Soft Machine.
Soft Machine, Steam Hammer,
mm-hmm.
Tangerine Dream, the German Dream School kind of group.
Mm-hmm.
Faust.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this sort of music. And jazz. Jazz has become very strong along with this in my life. And this Mike, who I mentioned earlier on the program, is influencing me a lot, has put out a couple of CDs with his group, Northwoods Improvisers, and their music is everything from Eastern ethnic and space to pure, powerful, moving jazz. I mean, it's hard to describe because, again, it's like like describing this lab. You can't describe it in pictures. Are the only near thing that help you.
Is his music available?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's out on the ARC label out of Canada.
Well, two quick questions. One, could you comment on how you would chronicle or record the activity and events you're involved with? And number two, probably you and Art are familiar with John Keel, the author?
Yes.
And he had an Operation Trojan Horse that mentioned something about being able to pick up things strongly on Wednesday, the Wednesday evening phenomena. And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you.
All right.
Yes, those are both good questions. I have heard about that, although I haven't read in depth all the details of that particular Wednesday signal phenomena. But it's interesting. I do remember hearing about this or reading about it in brief mention of his. And more to follow, certainly. And as far as recording the signals, I've set up a system where I can log on tape a signal. When a signal's detected, now oftentimes you detect other phenomena too, like lightning, things like this. If a signal is that quick, you usually get a large pulse. The recorder starts and then stops.
Well, now, John, do you pause your transmission to listen on the same group of frequencies that you are transmitting on?
That's correct. I have to. Matter of fact, that's why we're working with a a 4 to 6 hour, maybe 8 hour maximum transmission period for the big transmitter, the one that sends out the cultural program.
Right.
Because the signal is obviously so present that it would override the very receiving equipment at that frequency.
Of course. So do you have any recordings of what you would consider to be some sort of intelligent response?
Not necessarily an intelligent response. All I've got over the years that I've done this is unusual electromagnetic interference or noise. Now, when I say noise, I'm talking about during the eclipse, one of the recent eclipses, I picked up some kind of electromagnetic interference possibly related to solar activity or atmospheric disturbances caused by that. That created a lot of unusual signal noise, but it was random. It wasn't patterned in any particular form.
All right, but I guess my question then would be, John, after spending all of these years and the better part of your adult life building and operating this incredible setup and not getting anything tangible back in terms of a signal or an absolute UFO visit, other than perhaps the one you described, why do you continue?
Well, it's best described as when you're like an artist, or you create. You have a creative inspiration based on an experience. You continue to want to create. You continue to want to build these enormous things and reach out and continue reaching. No, I just simply never gave up.
Maybe like a gold prospector who never strikes his big vein, but he's always out there looking for it.
That's it. That's precisely it. There's that one in a million, or one in a thousand, or one in 10 million chance that maybe someday within your lifetime you're going to find that big vein, that mother lode.
Yeah. Well, maybe. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Shepherd. Hello.
Hello. This is Abe from Seattle.
Yes, sir.
I had a couple questions for John and one for you, Art.
All right.
First of all, I have some interest in electromagnetic detection. I was wondering, does he have any ideas for a wide field, deep space tracking for electromagnetic detection? And it says here that you picked up some electromagnetic disturbances, and I was wondering if he had any ideas on that. And I know that, you know, like Bob Lazar, he talks about A and B gravity waves,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering, you know, if there's any way to detect that in the, you know, out there in the space. And to you, Art, did you get that fax today from me about the pit?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'll hang up and listen
to your comments. All right, thank you.
Okay, on that question, yes. There's a couple of instruments that I use, the primary instrument being the one we built ourselves using the 741 dual op-amp circuit, and it's got a speaker in it, it's got a meter, it's got a readout, you can record from it, et cetera, and so on. And the 741 has a very wide operating frequency range as long as you don't insert capacitors or inductors in the circuit. They have a tremendous gain. You can crank them way up. I use that in conjunction with different pickups. Everything from magnetic coils that are hand wound. Some of them I've had them as big as 8 feet in diameter with many turns of telephone wire on them, and set them up on the yard and then listen to see what I can pick up. And you hear all kinds of things. You hear AM stations. You hear a lot of Earthside stuff, but you also hear whistlers and things in the atmosphere caused by electrostatic disruption, like from lightning and things like that. And they're almost like an echo. They're really interesting. And you can, on clear nights, you can also hear clicking and popping. You can hear noise that just fades in and out. You can't really pinpoint where it's coming from. It could be anywhere, anything.
Have you ever, John, and I don't know how you're set up there, but have you ever heard an echo of your own transmitter immediately after you shut it down?
Not immediately. Matter of fact, there was one case where it was more than immediate. It was within microseconds. It was so quick you would almost say it was a reflection off the ionosphere or something.
Yes.
It was so fast.
Yes.
Yeah, there's that sort of thing. I have picked that up, but say an echo at a greater distance, I haven't. I'm assuming in that, now this is only an assumption, this isn't proven, that either the atmosphere is absorbing it at that point or it's passing out into space. It's doing one or the other, and that would explain maybe why I wasn't picking up an echo.
All right, so your house, the entire apparatus, the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, is on the market.
Yes, that's correct. It's now, I'm not getting out of the business completely. I'm recapitalizing. I'm needing, because of the economics of this, I need to recapitalize what I'm doing. I need to start over and refocus this effort even more and work on some new designs and new concepts that are along similar lines but more refined. And in order to do that, I've got to do something pretty drastic to raise the money. There's no way to do this. You can't borrow this money from a bank to do it, really.
No, that'd be a tough one to sit down and try to talk to a banker about this.
No kidding.
But I can imagine that a movie company, some kind of company that wants an incredible background, would purchase all of this for exactly that reason.
Yep, and or possibly lease the space and do a location contract or something of this sort. That's another option. That may even save it from having to be sold.
Well, if you were to sell it and have lots of capital to work with, what would you do with it?
Well, I would continue the work that I'm doing, but I'd also refine the equipment even more and experiment with some, what the man just mentioned a little earlier there about detecting gravity waves. And because there's been so much talk lately about stars colliding, supernovas, and all this other kind of very interesting and very influential topic, should it occur within our lifetimes, that would be nice to be able to maybe detect gravity waves from in advance, something like this. They travel supposedly quite a bit faster than the light or the other particles from that kind of explosion or energy release.
All right.
That scenario.
Well, you're an amazing person, John. You really are an amazing person. And if I can be of any assistance to you in the future in any way, please let me know. I'd be glad to help you out, technically or here on the air, or however, whatever kind of help you can use, because I think you're a very, very special person.
Art, that's very kind of you. And I guess for now I would say feel free to pass on this information about me to Strange Universe, to Dark Skies, to these groups. I wouldn't mind maybe getting a fax from you with the contact information for Strange Universe or Dark Skies, but feel free to contact them directly.
All right. Well, Strange Universe talks to me almost daily. I got two calls from them earlier in the day. So my guess is if they go up and they look at all this, they will be contacting you, and I certainly will pass on your information to them, because this ought to be seen. This really needs to be seen. And I guess I would hope that somebody would purchase what you've got there and make it into some kind of museum.
That's what I'd like to see, ideally.
To see it maintained.
That's it. That would fulfill a deep wish inside my heart. And I'd like to say, too, that for your listeners, they'll get a really good look at this, if not sooner, when that program on TBS comes up, produced by Very Direction. Rush, I talked with Rush today, and he said that they tentatively were scheduling it for a Sunday in June 29th on Sunday.
All right. We'll watch for that. And in the meantime, your stuff is up on my website. They can get a look there, and there is an email address to contact you there as well, John.
There's an email there and a fax number that people can reach me at here if that is all right to give out.
All right. John Shepherd, his life devoted to Project Strat. John, thank you.
You bet, Art. Thank you.
Take care, my friend. That is John Shepherd. And if you want to see Project Strat, which is candy for the eyes, take a look at my website, www.artbell.com. Coming up, open lines.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702 727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Taking calls on the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
We are about to get into open lines, and I'm going to give you a Mel's poll update. The final chapter in a moment. I received this just before airtime, and the story of another mystery poll that somebody sent me earlier in the day. Actually, a couple of them. All right. We'll get to all of that and a lot more in open lines coming up. We've been telling you the story over the last 2 hours of Project Strat and a very, very, very unusual a man named John Shepard in Michigan, and it's best told visually. There are a few stories that are best told visually. It's on the website. Take a look. You've got to see it. In all my life, I've never seen anything like it. He has devoted his entire adult life to it. Well, all right, here we go. I received this literally a couple of minutes ahead of airtime, and it has to do with Mel's Hole. First of all, I want to thank you, your listeners and your callers. I particularly want to thank the skeptics because they are the ones that really helped me. I have decided to take the money and run. I have made a lease arrangement with regard to my land. The lease is to provide me with a sum of money to be deposited into an account in Australia. The money in Australia would allow me to immigrate to Australia, because I would normally be unable to do so because of my age. Australia, unlike the U.S., has very strict rules regarding immigration. So I guess if you're older, you've got to have money. Interesting. Anyway, he goes on. The balance of the mortgage on the land will be paid off by the leasing party. I will be paid a sum of money each month for the next 100 years. Should I predecease or die, the term of the lease, the money is then to go to my estate. If it is feasible, based on the leasing party's use of the land, I am to have my remains, upon my demise, returned to the U.S. and be disposed of in the hole. This last item is based on the future use of the hole. This is incredible. He goes on, if any commercial use of the land is made by the leasing party, their agents, or any other entity, I am to receive 5% of the gross revenues generated by the land. This would be in addition to the monthly lease amount. The lease can be renewed at the end of the term by a request of the leasing party. I will be indemnified against any damage to the land or environment based on actions of the leasing party, etc. I'll be indemnified against any damage to the land or environment, he goes on to say. This is a little hard to read. There will be no charges of drug manufacturing against me. I will not be charged with the importation and propagation of non-native plants. Any materials regarding my research will be returned to me. Any personal items remaining on the property will be returned to me so long as they do not compromise the security of the property. In return, I am not to release any photographs, written or oral descriptions as to location, or any information that would compromise the security of the property. I do not wish to talk to the press. In my opinion, there is no press other than Art Bell. If you want to be on the cutting edge, he says, Art Bell is the guy sharpening the knife. Though things were pretty scary at times, everything worked out well. I'm certain that if I never contacted you to begin with, I would not have been as fortunate as I am today. It is amazing what can happen over the span of a few days since Friday. I'm just trying to make it to the end of the month. Now money will not be a problem for me, ever. Thank you all, and let Mel's Hole enter into that murky territory of urban mythology or conspiracy theory. This is the end of the trail. Mel. P.S. Yes, they will tell me about the true nature of the hole. No, you will not hear it from me. So this appears to be the swan song of Mel. Maybe. That came about 2 minutes prior to airtime. I received a very cryptic, strange message from my affiliate, I think it's KXLE, up in Washington earlier today. It's on my answering service. I'm still not sure what that was all about, but it had to do with Mel's Hole. Then somebody sent me the following. James Johnson told a very strange story to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer back in June of 74. The Johnson family had just purchased a new home in Tacoma when their St. Bernard began sniffing around what seemed to be a small hole in the backyard. Thinking he had moles, Johnson ran a 50-foot-long sewer snake down the hole, but he never hit the bottom. Perplexed, he called a city manager who pronounced the opening to be 31 feet deep. By this time, the hole had widened, and he could see the first few feet were lined with bricks. The engineer suggested the family fill it with gravel. To avoid the $500 cost of filling the hole with gravel, Johnson bought, get this, 164 tires from the local St. Vincent de Paul thrift store and tossed them into the hole. He added an old rug, some boxes, several dog bones to the mix, and covered it with a wooden plank given to him by the city. A year passed without further incident. But get this, folks. When Johnson decided to install a sun deck, which would have to be built over the hole, he lifted the plank, and much to his surprise, he found the hole had sucked up all the tires. Johnson decided to research his house's history, and he learned that in the 1920s, the owners had also had a problem with the hole. They had thrown a large quantity of marble and assorted junk down into it. Apparently, this show of disrespect angered the hole, for an explosion literally blew everything out, marble and everything else. The lady living in the house was too frightened to remain and soon moved out. Another former resident stopped by the house and told Johnson his father had lowered him by rope down the hole in 1922. While in the hole, something pulled a bucket out of his hands. The tale of the Tacoma Mystery Hole quickly spread. Johnson was inundated with offers from people to explore it. Finally, he gave permission to one. They found some strange egg-shaped objects. On and on it goes with various theories then about the mystery hole in Tacoma. So, Mel's Hole is not the first mystery hole of this sort, apparently. Now another. Art, this may or may not be related to the hole found in Washington, but I want to share it nonetheless. Back in the spring of 1986, I was stationed in Germany with the U.S. Army. A fellow soldier who'd been to Germany before took me and one or two other friends castle hunting. His teenage daughter had a German boyfriend who went with us a lot on these hunts. Boyfriend, about 15 at the time,
told us as we were going to the castle, pronounced like Cologne, that a weird well was nearby. Explained that the man who owned the large land that the hole was in had lost some livestock mysteriously. Not lost as in where did they go, but as in how did they die. Apparently the man had owned the land for years, never gave much thought to this, quote, well on his land. He covered it with a wooden lid surrounded by a stone wall. Sound familiar? So his livestock wouldn't fall in. However, livestock still were dying. Though he explained it was sporadic, that it didn't kill every time they got near it. Long and short of it is this, I saw it. It drained, this hole drained every single flashlight we ever pointed into it. The dogs, check this, refused to get near it, and somehow did something to his sheep or goats, I forget which, that killed them. I don't know if the owner ever looked into animal autopsies or not to find out what killed them, but there were no dead animals while I was there, so I can't comment on that. Personally, I thought the man was drinking too much and had made most of it up. I mean, the only thing that struck me out at the time was that our flashlights always drained quickly when we pointed them inside the well. So there you go, another apparent bottomless pit, and I'm getting a lot of these kinds of stories now. So there it is, the story of Mel's Hole. Somebody has sent me, by the way, Daryl in Rancho Mirage says, good for Mel and Art Bell. For Art, he had the courage to talk. For Mel, he was smart enough to listen. But wouldn't you love to hear the whole story? Art, you didn't make his day. You made his life. Therefore, you now don't have to feel guilty. That's true. I was feeling a little guilty because Mel was in so much apparent trouble. But it does look as though it has worked out well for Mel. Now, there are those who are saying he has sold out this taking the money and running business. I don't know that I feel that way, and I know it's easy to sit there as an armchair general and say, what a sellout to take the money and to run. But the alternative might have been to lose his land, end up in jail, or worse. And so I can't, you know, I'm not going to make the judgment that he has done the wrong thing, because to be frank, I can't tell you in that situation what I would have done. I can't tell you. But it has certainly been a fascinating episode. Somebody has sent me a list now of 39 reasons why cats are better than men. This list is an apparent retaliation for a list I read yesterday of, actually, 40 reasons, 39 were arable, 39 reasons why dogs are better than women, so this list obviously is in retaliation for that, and I will get to it. Meantime, open lines, and I'll sort of drop a lot of items I've got here in as we go along. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello there. Is this Art Bell?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I have somebody that wants to talk to you.
Put them on. All right. Now, the radio's got to be turned off.
All righty. All righty.
Turn that radio off, please.
All righty.
All right.
You know, I really think that there's some, I know that there's some odd stuff out there. Why? Because it's God's land. I've seen this. I've seen a lot of weird stuff before. And I believe this story.
You mean Mel's story?
Yeah. I sure do.
Okay, well, I appreciate that point of view, I guess. I mean, half the people are going to believe it, and half the people are going to think it's baloney. Half the people are going to be angry at Mel for taking the money and running. And I imagine the other half are going to consider that they might have done the same thing. I don't know. We'll see. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Is this Art Bell?
Yes. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
Why do I have this problem? Now he turned it up.
thank you. Art Bell.
Yes.
I'm a college student at Central Washington University.
Okay.
About 5 minutes from Manitash Ridge.
All right.
And
I understand it was pronounced Manashtash.
Manashtash, okay. Yes, Manashtash Ridge.
All right. I'm leaving the line. His radio went back up again. Now look, I'm going to lecture on this for a second. When you get on the radio, when you get on the air, turn down your radio. That doesn't mean turn it down and then turn it back up a minute later. That means turn your radio down off ski until you until you're off the air. All right? Lecture ended. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Jason from Joshua Tree.
Hello, Jason.
Yeah, we're in the high desert, too, you know, about 60 miles from Victorville.
Yes.
That's about a two-day walk or a two-hour chupa run. what I wanted to comment on was I don't too much understand why he's going through all of this trouble to contact the UFOs. Why doesn't he try a flashlight?
You mean John?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
able to contact him with a flashlight.
Well, that's good. I mean, people go off on different treks in their life, and that is the trek that he went off on, that's all.
Yeah.
With you, it's a flashlight.
Yeah. Yeah, I just go out the same time, same place, same code on the flashlight, and they contact, and I see him right away. I've gotten him within 15 feet of him.
Yeah. That's a tribute to Everready.
Yeah. Anyway, go out in the field and try that.
All right, thank you. As you know, my wife and I had a UFO sighting, one very serious, close UFO sighting. And we will frequently go on walks. You know, we have what we call our little walking road here. We're way out in the country. And I will play that game sometimes, you know, flashing a light up into the sky. And I'll while we're walking. She doesn't like it. Stop doing that. Stop it. I'll tell her, you know, hon, this is just the kind of night where we're liable to see something like we saw before. I understand they respond to signals, and I'll begin, you know, torching the light up there a little bit, and she doesn't like it. She makes me turn it off. She had a very different reaction to seeing what we saw than I did. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. Going once, going twice, gone like the wind. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
This is Lauren from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hello, Lauren.
I wanted to mention that last night you had cloning on.
Yes.
And I wouldn't have a clone as a slave.
You wouldn't?
Well, my father is from India, and their family is well enough to have servants, and I didn't like having someone around to serve me. Now, I would have a clone that didn't have a brain as a possible organ harvest.
Oh, you mean just waiting until one of your organs failed?
Yeah, so that I would do.
You would, huh? You'd have a clone without a brain, but you don't want one. You don't want a thinking clone.
No, I don't.
You don't want a servant clone.
Nope. Wouldn't do that at all.
But you, as long as the clone doesn't have a brain, you wouldn't think there anything would be anything immoral about harvesting when you need.
Not really, no. I don't think so.
Okay, I can tell where we're headed. I've got news for you on cloning and a guest coming up Friday night, Saturday morning, coming up right after the break.
This is TRN and CBC, Talk Radio Network and Chancellor Broadcasting Company, home of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Call Art Bell toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255, east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033, 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Unscreened, live, open-line talk radio just ahead. And all right, coming up Friday night, Saturday morning, I think that this cloning story is in its own way ultimately as big as the splitting of the atom. That big. And I've been trying to figure out the truly appropriate way to approach it. And it's not easy to find a guest qualified to speak on cloning. But I found one. He is a university professor at Loyola, Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald. And his background includes the following. He is a fully qualified geneticist. He is, brace yourself now, also a Jesuit priest and a bioethicist. And he will be here Friday night, Saturday morning, and he will talk about this new discovery with regard to the cloning of a lamb, which, of course, is the same technology that would allow the cloning of a human being. And so here in one person, one university professor, we have all of the disciplines required to address the various aspects of this amazing story. That'll be Friday night, Saturday morning. It took me some time to find Professor Fitzgerald and to pursue him, and I want to thank Michael Lindemann at the 2020 group. And I called Michael and I said, Michael, this is a monster of a story, but I want to find a good guest, somebody who would be really qualified, and that's no easy job. And Michael Lindemann led me toward Dr. Fitzgerald, and then I pursued it from there. So that's coming up Friday night, Saturday morning. For now, back to the phones, west of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Bill.
Yes.
I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. I listen to your show all the time.
Glad to have you.
I have several things here that I've saved up for a period of time. We'll just run through them in passing, and maybe you can make some comment on them if you would.
All right.
Okay. First of all, I met a man here. I'm from Las Vegas. My name's Ron.
Yes, Ron.
And there's a man named Stan Johnson, and he has a story out, the true story of Bigfoot and his UFO connection.
I interviewed Stan Johnson.
Ah, okay. That's absolutely great. Another man that is extremely interesting and has gone through all sorts of things from remote viewing to much more fantastic things is Carlos Castaneda.
I would like to interview him.
He has a website.
Okay.
If you would be interested, I can pass it on to you later.
All right. That's fine. In fact, yeah. Send me some email or something.
Okay. Now I have one more thing.
Sure.
And this is probably the most incredible of all, but you've been talking for some time about the comets, the meteors, things like this.
Yes.
And there's no way of, disrupting a 20-mile-wide meteor. Well, I was listening to the reruns of the tapes you had by Al Bielek.
And
Preston Nichols.
Yes.
In which they talk about going back in time.
Yes.
The one man even mentioned a machine, a particle gun, which they just literally took off the top of a mountain.
Yep.
But he destroyed the plans.
Yes.
Let's go back in time and get that machine, and that could destroy a 20-mile meteor.
Well, I guess that would do it, all right. That's true. I'm still trying to evaluate what I think about the Philadelphia experiment. And I think clearly something did occur way back when. I don't know if it is exactly as Al Bielek described, but I think it, at least a good portion of it may have been. Al Bielek was able to describe technically things that made an awful lot of sense and things that would probably produce the kind of results that early on they claimed they had. So something occurred, and I can well imagine the U.S. Navy's interest, in fact, the armed services' interest in invisibility. And that's what they were trying to do, is produce radar invisibility, in fact, optical invisibility. And to this very day, we continue to pursue the same thing with, of course, stealth technology.
And at a time that our ships were being sunk by German U-boats on a regular basis, you can well imagine they would pursue that with vigor. So I do think something really did occur with regard to the Philadelphia experiment. Whether it was in totality, as explained by Al Bielek, or not, in detail by Al Bielek, I don't know. But something happened. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art?
Yes.
I have a call in reference to, at the beginning of the show, your guest described a light that fell from the sky. And
yes.
Yes, I have a similar experience.
One light that separated and then fell toward Earth, yes.
Yes, actually, what we saw was three lights, but they were, he described them as baseball size. Ours were a little larger. I described them as softball size. It was on a familiar road, and my wife pointed them out to me, and we went to them, and...
What do you mean you went to them?
Well, we followed them, tried to get under them as we were driving.
Yes.
And we lost them in the trees and kept driving and saw them again, and they fell to the ground, and we lost them again, and this went on for, I don't know, we probably traveled 50 miles, maybe an hour.
Trying to catch these lights.
Trying to catch these lights, yes.
Uh-huh. And you never did.
And no, we never did. We ended up parked on the highway watching these lights appear and fall to the ground and reappear again, and we'd start going down the road again.
Well, I couldn't begin to tell you what it would be.
I couldn't either.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call. Stories of lights. I mean, what do you say? I saw a light. Here's an interesting story entitled... Actually, this should be submitted for an award, a Darwin Award, I do believe. Detroit, Michigan. A loudmouth office show-off blew his brains out when he sat down in the company cafeteria and played Russian roulette with a fully loaded revolver. He was so intent on showing us how macho he was that this idiot forgot to leave only one bullet in the cylinder. One shaken a stenographer said, "You don't get many chances when you play the game that way." That's right. So he was going to demonstrate his prowess by playing Russian roulette, but the idiot forgot to unload the rest of the bullets, so didn't give himself much of a chance. That's a definite nomination. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hi, Art Bell. Hi, how you doing? Hi, my name is Bill. I'm calling from West Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Bill.
Hi. I have an interesting theory about UFOs, about their origins, that's different, much different than the classical idea that they supposedly they came from another planet orbiting another star.
All right, well, what is it?
Okay, you know, light years away, trillions of miles away.
Yep.
Okay, the point is, since many of these beings, specifically the greys or the reptoid creatures or whatever, they're all humanoid, not human exactly, but humanoid in appearance.
Humanoid, yeah.
The same shape, two arms, two legs, with fingers, maybe a different number of fingers, eyes, etc.
Yes, yes.
My thought is they have to be related to the Earth. Going by what Carl Sagan, the late Carl Sagan, and other well-known scientists would say regarding evolution, they're too much like us to have really originated origin from another planet many trillions of miles away. So my thinking is it involves physics, different dimensional physics, and involves our own planet, Earth. A 5-second version, and I'll expand on that. A 5-second version would be, could they be intelligent descendants from a dinosaur? Let me explain. Could they be not so much spacecraft as space-time craft? Could they be vehicles from the Earth of a different timeline? Let me explain. In other words, what would happen if the dinosaurs, this is my thinking, if the dinosaurs had 65 million more years to evolve? In other words, if they came from the Earth in which, in their timeline from their Earth, that asteroid that hit the Earth 60,000 million years ago, let's say missed the Earth entirely, okay, or hit in the sea and did not generate enough immense dust and debris to have destroyed the dinosaurs. So to make it simple, let's say that asteroid was on a different trajectory, missed the Earth entirely. So on their Earth of their dimension or their timeline, as I call it, they lived another 65 million more years. Could they have evolved into these humanoid-type shapes, like dinosauroids or humanoids or whatever you want to call them, that we see these beings now? For example, dinosaurs don't have hair.
All right, I think I've got the picture. Descendants, then, of the dinosaurs in a different dimension.
In a different timeline, and they can pop in from the Earth of their timeline to our timeline, back and forth. In other words, let me expand this a little more. Dinosaurs don't have hair at all. These things don't have hair. Dinosaurs don't have ears. They're from reptiles, amphibians. Mm-hmm. They don't have ears. The eyes of these dinosaurs could have evolved to these large almond-shaped eyes that we see now. Dinosaurs are not mammals. These things seem to be, assuming they exist, the grades and so forth, they seem to not be able to hug the young of the hybrid that people claim to have seen, hybrid between humans and these beings, or they'll ask women who have been abducted supposedly, you know, and had little beings, hybrid beings taken from their uteruses and so forth. They have the human.
All right. I think I've got the idea. Thank you. Descendant from dinosaurs who were not really killed off in some alternative universe. Why is that? Why is that a likely scenario compared to the straight science version of an extinction produced by an asteroid strike? I mean, it's some pretty good hard science to say that did occur here. Now, I understand that you're talking about an alternative sort of dimensional evolution. I suppose, well, it's as good as anybody else's theory. Hey, guess what? Arthur C. Clarke, the author of 2001, has authored a new book. It's called The Final Odyssey. The Final Odyssey. I can't wait. 3001. 3001, The Final Odyssey. Just coming out. Now, I will read that right away. And I'll tell you a little bit about it. A Frank Poole could scarcely believe his eyes. He had drifted, frozen in space, for nearly 1,000 years since HAL, the Spaceship Discovery's errant computer, murdered him by thrusting him away from his ship. Now, revived by doctors and regaining his strength, Poole peered down from a room 1,240 miles above the Earth. My God, he cried, looking out at a cylindrical elevator tower. Now hear me, a cylindrical elevator tower that tapered far, far below, all the way down to the African plain. Then he turned his gaze upward, where the tower stretched to the geosynchronous orbit 22,000 miles high. A space elevator. That is the opening scene from Arthur C. Clarke's new novel, 3001, The Final Odyssey. What an incredible mind this man has. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, my name's Greg from Chino.
Hello, Greg.
How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, I heard you comment earlier about getting cancer from high power lines.
Well, there's a lot of research going on about that right now, yes.
Well, I've been an electrician for 18 years, and in that time I've had the opportunity to work in Hollywood, where they have, for the movie studios, big generating stations on the lot to feed the DC lights.
Sure.
And in the years that I've worked there, I noticed that out of all the people that work there, because the generator operators would just sit in the room for 14 hours at a time every day, that I'd say 3 out of 4 had cancer and had to leave their job.
Well, I hate to say it, but there have been studies as well about ham radio operators having a higher incidence of a cancer being in close proximity to electro
magnetic fields of large size. And so there's a lot of ongoing research about all of this, and I can't tell you that I have the answers. I just know that there are people who are suspicious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Great show, by the way.
Thank you very much for the call, sir. Listen to this, folks. Hello, Art. Derek in San Antonio here. I thought you might want to know that KENS-TV has obtained photographs of a chupacabra captured in a trap just south of San Antonio. Big news, folks. A rancher took photos of the beast and brought them to us. He claims there were three. One in the trap and two others, get this, jumping up and down, and they ran when he approached. I will try my best to describe the photos for you. The creature is about as long as a human leg, pasty white, has ridges on its back like a dragon. It has two front legs and two rear legs, and at the end of each, two tiny offshoots that I would not call fingers. I wouldn't call them paws either. Almost claw-looking. You can see teeth on the thing, which is draped across the ground in an arc. The farmer says some men saw him showing the creature and took the photo, took the creature, saying they were going to have it stuffed. He claims to know where the body is, and we are investigating it. I'll be happy to send you a copy of our story, if you'd like, or send you a video of the Polaroid photos. Contact me, and it gives me a phone number, tomorrow. I thought you'd want this, though, for your show this morning. Yours in news, Derek, in San Antonio. There you have it, folks. It looks like they may have a chupacabra, and they may have photographs of the chupacabra, and they may have a chupacabra body. Wouldn't this be incredible? Again, this is a media person, Derek, down in San Antonio, and he's referring to what KENS-TV apparently has discovered. So I would like to know more about this. As you can imagine, I am going to follow this one up later today. What are these creatures? Where are they from? Why are they here? Why now? What's going on? I'd sure like to know. Listen to me. We are going to Alaska. This is not anybody's Alaskan cruise. There's lots of typical Alaskan cruises out there, and we'll do all of that, but then we'll take you into the real Alaska. It begins in British Columbia, Vancouver specifically, a beautiful city. There we board a brand new princess ship, the Dawn. The Dawn Princess, brand new. And we're going to, I don't know if you've ever been on a brand new cruise ship, but it is cool. We'll sail through the famed Inside Passage to Ketchikan, Juneau, historic Skagway, then up to the face of the towering ice fields in Glacier Bay National Park and majestic College Fjord. That is part of most or many Alaskan cruises. But you see, here is where ours separates from all the rest. Take it from me, I know Alaska. You want to see Alaska, you need to see the interior of Alaska as well. So, when we get to Seward, Alaska, we go into Anchorage. There, we board the Princess Cruise Line's luxurious Ultradome rail cars, and we travel on the Alaska Railroad to the famed Denali National Park. After that, we continue on by rail and visit Fairbanks, Alaska. You have got to come along. Ramona will be there. I will be there. Many others you know will be there. You'll be allowed to take photographs. I'll take pictures with you and all the rest of that sort of thing. By then, my new book will be out. By next month, it's going to be out. At any rate, this is going to be the Alaska cruise, I guarantee, folks, of a lifetime. If you want to come along, you must act quickly because it is filling quickly. East of the Rockies, the number is 1-800-633-2732. Call it, you know, about 8 o'clock in the morning or something. That's 1-800-633-2732. West of the Rockies, it's 1-800-848-7120. That's 1-800-848-7120. Get that call made because it's filling quickly. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
On the wild card line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Yesterday I read you 39 reasons why dogs are better than women. So today, from San Diego, I have received 39 reasons why cats are better than men. This is not going to be easy for me to read, but in all fairness, I will. Cats only purr when you stroke them. Cats clean themselves. The only toys that cats want are catnip mice. It's okay to neuter them. They'll warm your cold feet without complaining. Their whiskers won't scratch your face. They sit on your lap and only shed fur. The worst pest they carry is fleas. The worst mess they make is in their litter box. If you put them out at night, they never complain about it in the morning. You know they trust you when they let you scratch their tummies. They don't complain about eating dinner out of a can. You don't have to remind them to wear their coat. They never have to ask for directions. When they do go hunting, you never have to clean their prey. They don't mind wearing collars. They bite if they love you. This one really hurts. They don't know how to open super glue. You can carry them outside the bedroom if they snore. When they run around, you don't have to divorce them. They only growl at you when you really deserve it. They can think for themselves. They won't starve if you have to be away for a couple of days. And you don't come home to a sink full of dirty dishes. It's okay to let them follow their instincts. It's okay to engage in petting someone else's cat. If they bring you a dead present, you don't have to pretend you like it. That one hurts, too. Cats are never late for dinner. Their friends are not rats. They don't take it personally if you have a headache. You aren't disappointed if your cat doesn't remember your birthday. The cat never leaves the toilet seat up. That one hurts, too. They never have to say they're sorry. You can ignore a cat if it plays with its food. Cats are more sensitive to your moods. Oh, that one cuts deeply. Cats are more sensitive to your mood? Your cat falls asleep on the TV, not in front of it. Ooh. Your cat won't get upset if you turn off the football game. Cats don't care how much you spend when you go shopping. And finally, your cat never tells you how to improve your driving. I suppose, in all fairness, I had to read that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. Yes.
All right.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, goodbye. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hello, Bart. Art.
Bart? Who's Bart?
I'm sorry.
Bart Simpson. I'm Art Bell.
Sorry, Art Bell. This is the first time I got a chance to call.
All right. Well, here you are.
I just thought your show tonight was really interesting, and I saw something neat on Discovery this evening where a guy in northern Oregon is going about searching for Bigfoot, and he put, surveillance cameras in, like, desolate areas.
Yeah.
Where he thought he might find them. I thought that was a really good idea. It's about time somebody did that.
Did he find anything?
Well, I don't know. Is he just trying it out?
I see. He's just beginning the project.
Right. It was on Discovery this evening, and I was wondering, you know, what anybody else thought about that. I thought it was pretty clever.
Well, it's along the lines of, for a while we had a link up on my website. It may still be there somewhere, I don't know. A lady who had a haunted house, and she put, I think, 7 cameras around her house, including under her bed, and you could access them from the Internet, and people could go in and look at this lady's house 24 hours a day and watch for ghosts.
Did anybody see anything?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's pretty neat. I hate when that happens, though.
Well.
I also wanted to compliment Keith on his webpage.
It is a good one.
Oh, it's just fantastic. I kind of write a few web pages myself now and then. And I just, every time I go to that page, I'm impressed. You know, when it comes up, the music comes on with your theme show and everything.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was just really amazed. I don't know, you know, how many people appreciate how much work goes into that webpage. But that guy spends a lot of hours, you know, slaving over the images and everything, getting it all going right. He's just done a fantastic job. I really, you know, have a lot of respect for Keith.
So do I. He works very, very, very hard at what he does, and the website is every day there's something different there, and I think that's what has people coming back all the time. But that's a lot of work.
I'll let some of your other callers get a chance to talk to you, and if possible, I'd like to see if anybody else saw that thing on Discovery this evening on the Bigfoot.
All right. I've got an article here entitled Dark Dealings in the Vatican. Although it passed completely without notice in the U.S. press, a bombshell was dropped in Rome last November and continues to send shockwaves that are being felt in political and religious circles worldwide. Commenting on the growth of evil in the world and the need for the church to appoint more, get this, more exorcists to aid the many people who are possessed, obsessed, or disturbed by demonic activity, the Archbishop stated, now the third dimension of evil is the most dangerous. It is subtle and the most terrible. I could not believe when I discovered this third dimension of evil. The third dimension is people who follow instructions in satanic sects. Now with this third dimension, I'm sorry to say, our church belongs to it. I'm very sorry I could not understand it myself. And even now, I don't understand, but the only solution that I have is, together with Jesus, 3 years, he never changed, then I understand that the third dimension of evil existed, not only now, but it existed even then, because nothing could change the heart of Judas. Nothing. The devil in the Catholic Church is so protected now that he is like an animal protected by the government. Wow. So apparently,
the Vatican is trying to get more exorcists to deal with the increasing evil in the world. What do you make out of that? And again, they suggest here that all of this passed basically without any notice in the U.S. press, that the church is moving toward a war with evil, an open war with evil in the world. Let me be interested in that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Joel in Wyoming.
Hello there.
Yeah. You're talking about how somebody was talking about shining lights in the sky and getting aliens down.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we do that out here, and every once in a while we get some sort of response. I'm not exactly sure what it is. This kind of light comes swooping down. It's kind of a glowing light.
Well, I wonder really, honestly, why people do that. Because suppose you really did get a visitation. I mean, suppose you were abducted. Suppose you were strapped down on something with long needles. You know, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Imagine after that you'd keep your flashlight in your pocket.
Well, it'd teach you a lesson.
Yes, it would. All right, well, good luck to you. Remember the deformed frogs, folks? This is from the St. Petersburg Times. It's entitled, Deformed Bugs Found in Dirty River. Fish are not the only funny-looking critters. Here, a pair of Florida A&M University researchers have found now deformed bugs in the North Florida stream, polluted for decades by the Buckeye, Florida pulp mill. The bugs, snow bugs, and mayflies have enlarged or extra structures on their gills. Oh, my. Deformed bugs. I wonder how long it's going to take for this to move its way up the food chain. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Dan in Salem, Oregon.
Hi, Dan.
I was wondering if you can help me out. I just moved from the Bay Area up here, and I heard you advertise that radio from
yes.
the D-Plane Company, and you say you can get the Bay Area, San Francisco, on that radio?
I absolutely do, yes.
Do you think is that KSFO that you're talking about? Because I used to just listen to you on KSFO.
No. Where are you now?
I'm in Salem, Oregon.
Salem, Oregon.
And I'm wondering if there's a radio out there, maybe with the select antenna, that I might be able to receive it during the day, if that's possible.
I'm not so sure that Salem, Oregon would be an appropriate place to try to get KSFO.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be lots of alternatives for you there. For example, how about KYKN,
mm-hmm.
1430 on the dial, mm-hmm. in Salem, Oregon?
Yeah. I think I'm getting on you on KEX right now. That's Portland, right?
Yes, but I'm trying to tell you there's a station right there in Salem,
uh-huh.
1430 on the dial.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, that should come in on your tooth fillings or something.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate it. That's all I really wanted to know, if I could might be able to...
All right, well, tune around toward the top of the dial, and you'll hear us.
So you don't think the odds for me of being able to pick up KSFO from here is very good, huh?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, I just wanted your opinion.
Okay, well, there it is. I'm being honest with you. No, I don't think so. I mean, you might catch them, and with enough antenna gain and directionality, you might be able to pick them up, but I think it's going to be a struggle for you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Tonight I was re-listening to that broadcast where the guy was talking about the Eldridge.
That would be Al Bielek, yes.
Yeah, Al Bielek.
Yes.
Anyway, as I was sitting there and listening, some stuff kind of rang a bell for the first time. I'd seen that movie about that event several times, but nothing ever soaked in. Anyway, I remembered hearing where people talked about their encounters with UFOs, and the UFOs seemed to be surrounded by some sort of, like, what they call a cloud of some sort?
A corona.
Mm-hmm. Corona?
Yes, corona.
Oh, I thought they meant, like, a cloud of some kind. But I was just thinking, well, if it is something like that, could that somebody in a different dimension has, like, phased themselves out of their dimension, and they come into this one?
Me? I don't know.
Kind of like, you know, the elders disappeared, and the guy said that the only thing he could really see was just, like, a cloud of smoke, you know, around the outline of the ship.
Yeah, the very similar type thing. In other words, some sort of corona. Yes, it could be. It could be that dimensional travel is or has associated with it this kind of corona. And it could be that the key to this kind of travel is the high-intensity magnetic and rotating RF fields as described by Al Bielek in the Philadelphia experiment. Sure. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Morning, Art. How are you?
I'm okay.
Okay. I just want to let me turn my radio on.
Yeah, please. Please do. And you're going to have to speak up because I can barely hear you.
Yes, sir. I was wondering, I know Tesla did experiments with very low sound, like about from 5 to 10 hertz around that southwest ceiling.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if they'd ever follow through with Tesla's experiments at very low frequencies, such as that emanate a sine wave and with very strong powers that would emanate the cosine wave, and where the sine intersects the cosine would be the tangent. And I was just wondering if anyone has ever experimented, to your knowledge, the Tesla's laws and that.
Not mine, but we can ask the audience. I know that there are increasing numbers of people experimenting with very, very low frequencies. And I think some of it is very dangerous. It's down near the frequencies that our brain is thought to operate on. And I think it represents a possible biohazard. That's why I was asking John about any effects that he might have felt, even operating as high as 40 hertz. There would be some, no doubt, wide band that might go down as far as that, and you would think there would be some biological effects. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Steve in Minnesota.
Hello, Steve.
Hello. So is there supposed to be some kind of test Friday night with HARP that we can tune into? I heard something about that.
It's March 7th and 8th, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, where do you go to tune in that in?
Yes, I do, Steve. They're going to be experimenting on 6.99 megahertz and 3.4 megahertz.
And during what time?
Between about 0430 and 0500, roughly, universal time.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thanks.
Right, thank you. And if you happen to catch the signals and you get them, they will actually send you a card of confirmation that you have received HARP. And you can bet that I'm going to be listening. I'm sure you will, too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello. Goodbye. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Will, WTGY, Madison, Wisconsin. I had a question.
The ever-persistent Will.
Answer. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, if you could kindly ask to answer, fax you an answer. Apparently in Australia, people listening to an AM radio can put an antenna into the ocean offshore and can pick up AM radio signals from America. Has he tried to put an antenna into the Lake Michigan, and can he hear anything?
All right. Well, I would say no. Antennas generally are very efficient when they're operated above water. Particularly for reception in lower frequencies like the AM band. And the opposite is true as well, Mel. And that means that if you want to transmit, you will notice that some of the most effective AM transmitters are located near large bodies of water. But they are generally above those large bodies of water or adjacent to them to use them as ground reflectors.
Putting an antenna underwater would not, it seems to me, be a very efficient way to operate, whether it's in Australia or here. So you've got it close to right now. You want an antenna up above or adjacent to water, and it makes a wonderful reflector. But putting it underwater, not to the best of my knowledge. Now, I mean, Will. This is CBC, and we'll be right back.
This is TRN and CBC, Talk Radio Network and Chancellor Broadcasting Company, home of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Call Art Bell toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
That's what it is. Top of the morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Great to be here. We'll get back to the phones. It'll stay open lines now through the end of the program. And I'm very, very glad you're along for whatever this ride turns out to be, and I never know night to night. All right, this is kind of an interesting letter that relates to a lot of what we're discussing this morning. See what you think. Dear Mr. Bell, I've been a listener to Dreamland for about 3 years. I'm also a pilot and flight instructor and a veteran of U.S. Air Force Intel. I was in the 4602nd AISS in the late 1950s, whatever that is. I'm certain you've heard of this unit. No, I haven't. Like you, I've had one UFO sighting, been a member of MUFON since 1986, and continue to be interested in the subject. However, I'm also somewhat skeptical of many so-called ufologists who have emerged in the last several years. What prompts me to write to you is a rather unusual phenomenon, which I've been experiencing since early December of 96. At first, I thought it was a low hearing problem or a hearing problem, because I've been hearing low frequency noise coming from my apartment. Not finding anything, I asked the neighbors and finally the local electric company. Within days, I noticed I was hearing the noise, a low pulsating hum, varying in intensity and pattern, but not frequency, while hiking west, north, and northeast of Tucson at distances of up to 15 miles apart. I thought something was amiss with my hearing, so I consulted an audiologist, a specialist here in town. I received a comprehensive hearing test, an acoustic reflex test. The doctor's equipment was able to test a person's hearing down to 125 hertz. What I was hearing, and I heard it during the tests as well, was below the capacity of his equipment, probably in the area of 20 to 80 hertz. He concluded, and I concluded, the noise was not internal, but external. The doctor mentioned to me that he had received telephone calls from three other people during the last month from divergent locations around Tucson, all reporting the same kind of sound. Also, during a trip last week to Prescott, Arizona, 200 miles north of here, I heard the same sounds on two occasions when I was a mile or so outside of town. Another local audiologist told me that similar hearings were reported last year from the Santa Fe, Taos, New Mexico area, and the source was perhaps the Hughes missile systems and or U.S. military. Frankly, I suspect a similar source for what I've been hearing. I understand the U.S. military was involved in the 1960s in ELF radio transmissions to submerge submarines around the world from a huge antenna array located in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I lived in southern Michigan for many years, and heard these accounts from time to time. I'm told that normal human hearing is 20 to 20,000 hertz. However, most people cannot hear what I hear. I'd like to know whether you are aware of any military and or corporate low-frequency experiments going on during the last month or two. Larry from Tucson, Arizona. Larry, we've got a buzz going on here where I live right now. There is some kind of low-frequency something that is being heard and felt by people in my valley, the Pahrump Valley. Indeed, there was such an occurrence ongoing in New Mexico. So I thought I would toss that out for anybody out there who has also heard what Larry has heard. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question for you.
All right.
The show that you had on. First, my name's Shane. I'm calling from Tri-Cities, Washington.
Yes, sir.
And it was about a guy named Mel that had a hole.
Yeah, we talked about that tonight.
Okay, I missed that because I just got off work and turned my radio on, and I just wanted to get any follow-up on it.
Yes, Mel has sold the property.
Oh, he sold it?
Yep.
Did he sell it to government or something? Or?
Well, that's a very good question. I read the facts. I'll try and get to it again if I can, but I've read it already twice tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
All right, take care. Yes, he has sold or leased the property. And apparently the deal he has made is going to fix him up for life. Now, you can choose to either believe this to be true or not. But he is not going to, does not want to talk to the media. And boy, I've got a lot of media who would like to talk to Mel, I'll tell you that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there. I'd like to speak to the host there.
Turn your radio off. That is number one.
Right. Oh, man, I'm on already, huh? Hey,
yes. Very good.
I had a question for you.
All right.
How do you feel? I mean, I know you guys have been talking about possible alien life and everything like that, but I feel, honestly, I feel that there's no life out there besides what we have here on planet Earth. How do you feel about that?
Could be.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem possible that there's anything else. I mean, you look into the stars, you look out there, and I mean, there's a lot out there, but it's so impossible to even, you know, fathom that there's life out there.
Why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Only reason why I'd say that is...
I mean, all those little pinpoints of light out there, they're stars.
Yeah, they're...
Like, they're like our sun, right?
Yes.
And around them, there are planets.
Yes.
More planets than you can imagine. More planets than there are grains of sand on the beach, or all the beaches.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, why is it hard for you to imagine that there would be life elsewhere?
Well, the only reason why I feel this way is because it life, I mean, if you look at a human, like with computers and everything, it is so hard to even produce something that is even slightly intelligent. It would take... Oh, my gosh, it'd just be so hard to even...
It happened here?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're a fluke of nature, is what I'm saying. It would just be... It's so impossible for it to even happen anywhere else. God doesn't even know what happened here, is my opinion.
God doesn't know what happened here?
Yes. I don't know.
So we are a mystery even to God.
Well, I think so, yes.
Certainly a new take on things. How did you arrive at this philosophical conclusion?
Well, I think we're kind of an experiment, and even our higher being, even God, would say that we are
an experiment
gone wild, maybe. I mean, we're beyond.
Whose experiment are we?
Oh, it has to be God's experiment.
I thought you just said God didn't know anything about us.
Well, no, I think God knows about it. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think we have gone beyond what God expected.
Hmm.
Starting from the beginning, though. I mean, when everything was created, and he did, or she, whatever it is, did his own thing, it's gone a step beyond where... going back to my original point, I think that we are the only life.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, maybe not only life. I think there might be other life out there. I mean,
well, we already know there's microbial life from Mars. We know that.
Yeah, there might be other cellular life or anything like that.
But nothing that has evolved to an intelligent level.
That's correct, yeah. That's my opinion, at least.
All right, good enough. I appreciate your opinion, and you could be correct. But wouldn't it be sad and lonely to look at all those stars with all those planets and imagine the only place that life, intelligent life, has evolved would be here? That would be pretty sad, wouldn't it? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Dan from Denver.
Yes, sir.
Kind of on the subject of HARP, I've got that information down. I'm going to set up my equipment to record it. But you've heard of these number stations that you can pick up on shortwave there?
The what stations?
So number stations, they just, it's a recorded voice that just keeps going on and on with an endless string of numbers and letters. Have you ever heard those?
Yeah, usually it's some kind of code.
Yeah, there's been a lot of books circulating around, and it's all speculative of what they are, and I'm just wondering if you knew anything, knew what they were.
Secret codes. I don't know what they are.
I don't know. It'd be kind of interesting if you could
have
to guess sometime.
12, H, 16, dash, 4,
yeah.
3.
That's about it. Oh, on the Basin radio, yeah, I've had one of those for several months, and I'll tell you what, that everything you say it is great for camp, and I take that along with my select antenna. Tell you people out there that don't have one, they don't know what they're missing.
I know. It's a wonderful radio. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. There are a lot of odd things that you will hear on shortwave that are very hard to explain. And they are various things. Many of them are codes, some from the government, some no doubt from drug dealers, all kinds of nefarious, strange sources in all corners of the world. That is part of the adventure of shortwave. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Oh, we just missed them. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. You district here?
Hello.
Glad you're doing better.
Glad to hear you. What's on your mind?
Say, I grew up 70 miles east of where this hole is, you know, by Owensburg.
Yeah.
And I tend to believe there might be something to it. And I'm just wondering, you know, now that Mill's on his way out, if maybe some of the neighbors could be interviewed by you or the other media.
Well, if any of them want to contact me, I'm certainly open. You know that.
Yeah, there might be some more light shed on it.
Okay.
Yeah, just a thought.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Take care. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is JJ from Austin.
Austin, Texas.
Yes, sir. Two callers ago, the gentleman that finds it hard to believe that there might be something out there, people like that really amuse me.
Well, you've got to allow that it may be so.
Well, I do somewhere because I consider myself extremely open-minded in comparison to when I look around at other people's responses to certain things, especially when I have talks with people about things that I hear on your show.
I think it's simply less likely. I think it's more likely that there is life than not.
Basically, anybody that can think that it's just not possible that, you know, considering what all we must have gone through to evolve to the point that we're at, you know, I think if you really did look at the big picture of things, philosophically speaking, you would have to be an extremely egotistical person to think that. Because in the big scheme of things, we really don't amount. amount to a hill of beans, if even that. I don't know. It's just the skeptics like that, I appreciate them, though, because it makes the grasp of the information has to be that much more solid.
Well, look, don't sell us too short here. We're more than a hill of beans.
Yeah, but...
But we might be less than a towering mountain.
I don't know. I think, philosophically speaking, you know, like, of course, I think very Eastern philosophically, so I think that might have something to do with it. But I don't know. It's just interesting to listen to people like that. Just
you think very Eastern. You mean like a New Yorker? Or...
That, too. I'm pretty short with people. I don't mean to be, but I should be. but not in a bad way. I just feel like I'm just getting by or something. I don't
know.
But I do want to let you know, I have started little Art Bell parties all over Austin here.
Really, in that case, you might want to know that modeling myself after the president, I have adjacent to my studio a bedroom where my uplink transmitter is located. We call it the uplink room. And we're going to be auctioning off opportunities to sleep in the uplink room.
You're kidding me.
Oh, no.
I want in on this.
Listen, I have to go. I just thought I'd drop that little bomb on you there. Yes, indeed. Opportunities to sleep in the famous uplink room. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Jerry in St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Pretty good. I thought that was a pretty interesting story about Mel with the hole.
Very interesting.
I sure hope he makes it. Hey, Art, do you know if they're going to try and pick up Dreamland in St. Louis again?
Dreamland will most assuredly, either on the station you're now listening to or another, be in St. Louis shortly.
Okay, thank you very much, Art.
All right, take care. All things given time. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, let me turn my radio off here.
Turn it off.
Yeah, you know, Carl Sagan, some years ago, I remember hearing him say something about, talk about all the millions and billions and billions of stars out there.
Right.
And I was very surprised at the fact that he said that the chance of life out there was almost non-existent. And I found that...
Well, that's an opinion.
Yeah, well, to someone as brilliant as he was...
Not science. That's not science. That was an opinion.
Well, to me, maybe it was government. You know, he got a lot of grants and things. So maybe he had a little pressure not to let on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I kind of wanted your opinion on that.
Well, my opinion is that more likely than not, there is intelligent life out there.
Well, I believe it very much so.
My opinion.
But I just remember years ago just being so surprised that he would say something like that. I mean, we look at the universe and there's places that just we don't even know exist. Or if we do, it's beyond our imagination.
You know, I wasn't actually aware that he really said that. Quite to the contrary, I always thought that he had maintained that there was a high probability of life.
Well, yeah, this was probably 10 years ago. And I remember him saying it. I remember just, like, it put me aback to hear him say something like that.
Hmm.
But, you know, who knows? Just wanted your opinion. Love your show.
Thank you very much.
All right,
take care. The only thing that I have wondered aloud about, and I will wonder aloud about it again right here, is that our planet absolutely is irradiating and has been for many years now all kinds of RF energy that would easily escape the ionosphere. FM, television, microwave, all kinds of things that would be by now light years and light years out. And one would imagine that many evolved intelligent civilizations would at least go through a period where they would emit RF energy. Now, we should have, it seems to me, received some kind of signal by now. And we have not. Actually, that's not true. SETI has received signals they cannot account for. But nothing that you would expect to receive, for example, from Earth several light years out. So, I don't know. It seems to me we should have heard something.
west of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Ken from Santa Susana.
Santa Susana? Where is that?
Well, actually, they incorporated it into what's called Simi Valley.
Okay.
In Southern California.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a couple questions first. First, I'm listening to you on my Bayesian radio, and it's everything you say.
I know.
Except for on KABC, you're not on at 11. So I have to get Nevada. I mean, I get all kinds of stations.
Right.
You know. And I was wondering if and when you're going to be, if you're going to cover that 11 p.m. slot on KABC.
There will be a solution to it shortly.
All right. And my other question is, now, talking about low hertz, megahertz.
Yes.
Is the woodpecker effect still going on from that?
No, I have, no. I have, the Russian woodpecker was, we believe, an attempt at over-the-horizon radar, the ability to look over the horizon and get a return, as you would in radar normally. And for years and years, the Russians polluted the shortwave frequencies with this thing called the woodpecker, and it was really a pain in the neck for hams because the Russians, of course, did not respect amateur frequencies, and their stupid woodpecker was all over the place. But in recent years, I have not heard it, so I presume, well, actually, without the money, they probably had to turn the damn thing off. We'll be right back.
Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Taking calls on the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Guess what, everybody? It is confirmed. I just spoke to the newsroom at KENS in San Antonio. It's confirmed. Maybe not. Wait till you hear this. Now, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and not call the KENS television newsroom. But I just did on the advice of a listener because they confirmed it. Here is the first report I got. Hello, Art. This is Derek in San Antonio. And I thought you'd want to know that KENS television has obtained photographs of a chupacabra captured in a trap just south of San Antonio. A rancher took photos of the beast and brought them to us. He claims there were three, one in the trap and two others jumping up and down as they ran when he approached. I will try my best to describe the photos for you. The creature is about as long as a human leg, pasty white, has ridges on its back like a dragon. It has two front legs and two rear legs, and at the end of each, two tiny offshoots that I would not call fingers, but I wouldn't call them paws either, almost claw-looking. You can see teeth on the thing, which is draped across the ground in an arc. The farmer says some men saw him showing the creature and took it, saying they would have it stuffed. He claims to know where the body is, and we are investigating. I'll be happy to send you a copy of our story, if you'd like it, or send you a video of the Polaroid pictures. Contact me at, he gives me a number. I thought you'd like this information. Well, I read that, as I do many things I get. Then I got this. Art, I just got off the phone with someone at the KENS television station, and she confirmed the story. She said the creature has been taken to Austin, so they have it, for further analysis. They have the video, but they cannot yet release it. The phone number for the newsroom is blah, 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 if you want to call them. And I did during the news break. She confirms it. And that's all I can tell you at this hour. They have a chupacabra. They have a chupacabra, folks. And it is presently on its way to Austin to be tested. So, there you are. Now, please do not call the KENS television newsroom. Take what I have given you as the definitive information. The poor gal there is going nuts taking calls ever since I read that story. And that's all she would be able to tell you, what I just told you. So there you have it. When there are further developments, you know me, I will get them to you. If I can get my hands on this photograph, you know me, it'll be up there for you to see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. This is Mike in Mound, Minnesota.
Hello, Mike.
I called the other night with Jim Forbes.
Oh, yes.
About the green meteors. I never got my question answered if you knew what that was, the green color. If it would be like copper or...
Oh, well, no, I don't know. I know that meteors reentering would produce all kinds of different colors, obviously, depending on... as they burn in the atmosphere, depending on what they're made of. So, no, I don't know what it would be.
And I had a couple other questions. Do you think Bob Lazar is credible? And is the Gulf Breeze sightings, have they been deemed a hoax?
No, they have not. There are people who tried to show they were a hoax. They found some sort of model that a lot of people think was planted. But... most people I know, most ufologists, believe Gulf Breeze was absolutely genuine. There were hundreds of witnesses. So,
yeah, I was there, and we didn't spend much time looking, but we found a little spot where they kind of congregate along the South Beach there.
No, it seems credible. Bob Lazar, my answer is I don't know. I don't know. I would like, I've interviewed Bob Lazar on about two or three occasions. It's been a while, and I would like to interview him again. He's probably sick to death of telling the story. So my answer is, I don't know. He tells a very good story.
Yeah, I got that model for Christmas.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
I've got one sitting 5 feet away from me.
Are you ever going to be coming to Minneapolis? Are you going to be on a book tour for the Quickening?
Huh. Answer, I don't know. I would love to come to Minneapolis. So maybe. Maybe.
Well, if you do, I hope to meet you, and I love your show.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Another thing is, please do not call my publisher. I have a big book coming out. I'm almost sorry I even said anything about it ahead of time. I probably should not have because it's generating so much discussion and so many calls to a very, very busy publisher. It is a big book. It's about 330 or 340 pages now by the time it's done. and it's going to the printer on Monday. That's how close it is, but you can't get it yet. Although I do have a galley copy. Don't forget, folks, we're auctioning off nights in the uplink room. We call it the esteemed uplink room, adjacent to the room where I'm actually doing the program here. Donations. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
It's late. Finally got one in the middle of Dickens, huh?
It would seem so, yeah.
All right. Who's got it? Did you say?
No, well...
Not the government.
Not the government, apparently.
Okay.
But whoever has it, it's on the way to Austin for testing, and they've got lots of good video and photographs of it, so, you know, this sounds real.
Cool. I got a question for you. Now, they're saying they can clone a sheep, right?
Correct.
Now, wasn't it last year that they come up with some dino DNA?
Yes.
Okay.
I follow you. Yes, the answer is yes, they probably could.
They said that DNA on that dinosaur was viable, right?
Do you think... Now, here is one where we really should ask, should we? I mean...
No.
you don't want to see any dinosaurs?
Well, not if they got a big fat guy with glasses working a computer, you know.
you know, you've got to wonder sometimes about movies being just barely ahead of reality.
Absolutely.
Sometimes leading us into it. You know they're going to try something like that, though. You just know it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If they're not doing it now.
Well, I say let's start with the plant eaters, okay?
Absolutely. The little ones.
No flesh eaters, no Tyrannosaurus rexes, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Let's go with the little ones, too.
No raptors.
Yeah.
I particularly dislike the raptors.
Yeah, but I just thought I'd put that in your mind there.
Thank you. Great. I'll have a nice dream about that. Yeah, sure. The clone. My God, what a story this cloning is. I'm going to have, I think, the appropriate guest on for it Friday night, Saturday morning. And we'll get the good hard science. And we'll get the religious view and the ethical view as well. I really think this is as big a story as the splitting of the atom. That's how big it is going to get. Are we cloning humans? Yes, I believe we have already done so. Is it wrong? I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Going once. Going twice, gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
Is, about this cloning stuff.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Is, I got a question for you. You know, a lot of these people are really worried about, like, Saddam Hussein and all these other ones. Wouldn't their past, you know, their life that they grew up with, wouldn't that make them different, the clone different from the person that started?
Yeah, potentially. I guess it could work out that way. You know, you are a product of not just your genetics, but your environment as well.
Right. You did hear what the sheep did say to the clone, didn't you? I am you.
Oh, no. Really? I appreciate that, sort of, sir.
Yes. Remember, you got up here at Portland, and if you go on your book tour, we hope you come back up.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. I am you. We're going to have to live with a lot of jokes out of this, you know. You know, I just realized it was a little stuffy in here, and I realized I had my window shut. Very exciting. It looks like they've got a chupacabra in San Antonio, folks. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much, Art. This is Chris in Seminole, Florida.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. By the way, I don't get we don't get your last hour in this area, so any responses I wouldn't be able to hear on the air. But I'm calling for a couple of reasons. First of all, regarding your caller, your guest earlier tonight.
Right.
Where he's trying to attract UFOs. A Strange Universe about a month or so ago had a segment where a man devised a technique for filming the sky where he would put his camera just underneath an overhang, for example, just to barely block the sun, and both he and Strange Universe were able to
get
footage.
I saw it.
Okay, and the second thing was a possible reason for the government wanting to suppress the any possible discovery from Mel's now leased hole is an article from February 1965 Flying Saucers magazine entitled Earth's Center of Gravity Up or Down, where they had a couple mine shafts that were connected by a tunnel. These mine shafts were over a mile long, and they hung a plumb bob, a weight, with both metallic and non-metallic weights and lines and cables, and because they thought it might be affecting the outcome, but it never did. Hmm. What they discovered was that at the bottom, these weights were actually further apart always in every experiment than they were at the top of the shaft. So this led them to believe that Earth's center, or the center of gravity, was 4,000 miles approximately from Earth's surface at any point, because they found this no matter where they discover it. So maybe they're trying to suppress our understanding of the nature of gravity.
As good a theory as anybody, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all I can say about it. All right, you bet. Take care. Maybe they are. Mel's leased hole. Mel is now set for life, he says. Which is certainly a better situation than he had the other day when he was worried about getting arrested and losing his property, having it confiscated, and having somebody say that he had some sort of drug lab on the property. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello?
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 Is our film?
Somewhere, yes. Mm-hmm. Is it Art Bell you're wanting to talk to?
Yes.
What would you say to him if you could talk to him?
Oh, this is you, huh?
I'm the only one here.
Well, I was trying to get through.
Well, you're through.
Long time. Anyway, I was kind of curious. I got a device here that I made.
What is it?
It's called a doohickey.
A doohickey.
It's like a little black hole.
I've had one of those. Like a little black hole?
Kind of like that. I got three computer systems here. Plus all my little electronic hardware that I got in here. And the neat thing is, I figured out a way of doing this. This is my 15th generation.
Of what?
It's a device that sucks up RF.
Sucks up RF?
Mm-hmm. It actually works. It uses the static electricity that runs off of, like, let's say you got your coax. I got a 11-meter radio.
CB.
Right. But my friends are using it with their hams. And what it does is that it knocks the signal they're even using in their mobiles. It takes 80% of the RF out.
Why would you want to do that?
No, it takes the static.
The what?
It sucks all the static out. So it cleans up their ears so they can hear better.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, well, this is electromagnetic.
Look, RF transmitted is one thing.
Right.
Static in receiving is another thing. One has nothing to do with the other.
I know. The difference is with this, though, is that I found, because of the properties of what it does, I used to have trouble where the radio would bleed into the computers, and the computers would bleed into the radio. I hook this thing up, they don't touch each other.
That's called shielding.
Something like that.
I think you've reinvented the wheel, sir.
Well, the thing is that it runs off of magnetism is what makes it run.
Magnetism.
Basically.
Why don't you just tell us what it is exactly?
Well, the way this is set up is that I've got two versions. I've got one that's got, it's a liquid form.
A liquid form of what?
Oh, it's a... You got two magnets, you got salt water,
yeah. You
got a container, and you run all your ground into the positive side of this unit.
Ah, now you're beginning to make a little bit of sense.
What it does is that it leaches up all that excess and then allows you to shoot out the little portions of it. It changes from one form into another and then...
Wait, all right. Let me stop you. Hold it. Stop.
Yeah.
You've got how large a container?
Right now, this one is about, let's say, about a couple of gallons. A
couple of gallons.
Mm-hmm.
And inside, you've got what?
Two magnets and salt water.
Two permanent magnets?
Yeah.
Two permanent magnets and salt water.
They're opposing.
That are opposing. The permanent magnets are in opposition to each other on each side of this container.
Right.
And inside you've got salt water, a conductor.
Right.
And you're taking the lead from the radio.
Radio, any kind of equipment whatsoever goes directly to that.
As a ground, as an artificial ground.
Right.
Well, you know what? That makes some sense.
And then the bottom magnet catches up all the excess that's broken down inside that field, and then sends it out to your natural ground, and then you don't end up overloading or saturating the outside area. I got a friend that has a problem with his tried to set his alarm on his car.
Yeah.
He gets near my thing here. He can't set it. It won't send. It keeps sucking it all up.
God, that's interesting. Can you hold on?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to break here. This man is actually perhaps on to something. I've never heard about this, but it sounds logical. This is CBC.
This is TRN and CBC, Talk Radio Network and Chancellor Broadcasting Company, home of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Hey, this guy may be on to something. This is a very interesting story. Are you still there, sir?
Yeah.
All right, you've got a container with salt water in it, a couple of gallons,
mm-hmm.
and that would act normally, minus the magnets,
right.
that would act as an artificial ground to some degree.
Right.
So are you able to notice a significant difference with the addition of the magnets?
Yeah, it's sort of like it creates its own little gravity field.
Boy, you might really be on to something.
Well, I've been building this for quite a while. I just got sick and tired of everybody complaining about, there's too much static, I can't hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they complain about every time I hear them transmit on sideband with audio, I can hear the static coming in with them. So when I put this in line, it was like certain people, key individuals that I told to build one, they put it in line, and they're actually, it seemed like it tripled their audio output, and it also, their receive was more sensitive.
Huh.
And I've got some friends that run ham radios. They did the same thing. And the guy said, God, I can't believe what, I'm in these upper freaks, and I have all these, I'm running these 2 meters or whatever, and I'm listening, and usually I get all this static, and I have to filter it out with my special filters.
Yeah.
Well, he turned the filters off. I said, okay, now watch this. Put this in mind. Now turn your filter on. He turned the filter on. Dead silence. So it keeps your radio from overloading.
How strong are these permanent magnets?
Well, I just make them out of car speakers.
Well, then not strong at all is the answer.
No. Well, I got one right now that this is the last generation one I just showed somebody today.
You ought to try a larger magnetic field. I used to...
I got 150 pole on this one.
I used to work in microwave, and
mm-hmm.
There are Klystron magnets that
are absolutely incredible. I mean, they're probably 100 times stronger than what you're using there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you're really onto something.
Well, I usually feel I'm the kind of person that if I can't afford it, okay. But I know I can get parts. I'll build it. If I can't afford the darn thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, then I'll build the darn thing. I'll figure out what makes it tick
mm-hmm.
and build it.
All right. I'm going to do some investigation. Please contact me privately.
I also build, I also work on computer systems.
Uh-huh. I understand. All right, sir. Thank you very much. And please contact me privately. What he's doing does make some sense. We're dealing here with electromagnetic radiation. Now, salt water in a container would, to some degree, serve certainly as an artificial ground. That much is reasonable and true. The addition of opposing magnetic fields within that, I can't imagine, would have some sort of a very, very interesting. I'm still contemplating what that man had to say. At first, it did not make sense, and then suddenly it began to sink in. And I wonder if any of the rest of you with a technical background would care to comment by fax or email to me on what that man just said about an artificial ground of a sort I've never heard of before. Definitely intriguing. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. WKQI, Sarasota. Good job, Art, interviewing that man just now with the water and the magnets.
Very interesting,
you,
huh?
But that was a good job you did. What you have said before, that sometimes people who are not really articulate are really people who have a lot to give. And when he first started talking, you stayed with him, and you drew him out. And anyway, I really appreciate you, because what you have said, that sometimes ordinary people have extraordinary aptitudes or gifts. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, and about the lamb, the first thing I noticed was that this lamb is now 7 months old, okay? So what you had said was you thought probably there were other experiments going on?
Yes.
And now they didn't tell you until the lamb's 7 months old, and they have turned it out so it's you know, got free range with other animals
mm-hmm.
instead of just keeping it isolated, which makes me think also that there's more stuff going on out there, right?
I must agree, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. I'm listening to the radio station.
I can barely hear you. What did you say?
Well, I'm just wondering, I can hear your radio station, but you're talking, it seems kind of different.
Well, you should turn your radio off.
Okay.
You want to be on the air, right?
Yes.
Okay, turn your radio off. Don't
right.
worry about it. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a couple of comments about what you were saying about ancient prophets.
Yes.
Well, this is one of them. It's about the guy who was talking about a time capsule in the Sphinx.
What guy?
I can't remember his name. It was on in during the 50s. It was a Viking.
Okay, there's something wrong with your phone there, sir. You're getting all kinds of clicks and stuff.
Hold on. Well, it was, I think, 50. Well, I know it was in the 50s. And he was talking about how in the 1998 there was going to be a time capsule found under the left paw of the Sphinx.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Mm-hmm.
What about it?
Well, I was just wondering, do you know when the actual date was?
No, I'm terribly sorry, I don't. There have been various predictions made, of course, about what is going to be found under the paw of the Sphinx. There have been some archaeological and X-ray studies that have shown that there are areas to explore and things to see that we have not yet seen. But the Egyptian authorities thus far, and probably until 1998, late 97 or 98, are not going to allow any further explanation or exploration, I mean to say. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this out there?
Yes, turn your radio off, please.
I have been trying very hard to reach you.
Well, you've got me, so go ahead.
My brother from England was here, and he listened to your show, and he was very impressed with your lead in music.
Oh?
And also, you used to tell us about the four brothers who made that very nice music, and we would like to get a tape of those.
Well, I don't know where you would get that. I don't know anything about four brothers.
Oh, there was a group. They had very unusual music. My brother was looking for Aztec music. And we go into,
That would be a group called Cusco. C-U-S-C-O.
K-U-S?
C-U-S-C-O.
C for
Charlie. C-U-S-C-O.
C, oh, Cusco.
Yes.
They're brothers.
No.
No. And where are they located?
Germany.
Good heavens. In Germany?
Yes.
And he's looking for it here in England, in America.
Well, you can find it here. It's sold here under a music label called Higher Octave.
Higher Octave?
Yes, you can find it in music stores.
I see. And what type of music is that? What is that?
Well, it sounds very Peruvian.
Peruvian. Uh-huh. Well, it's not exactly Aztec, but...
Well, very close.
It's the same family, right?
Yes.
I thank you very much, Mr. Bell.
You bet.
And I want to tell you that you have turned me into a regular insomniac.
Well, I never know what to say about that. I don't
what
know
happened to the 11 o'clock hour where you started?
Oh, you're in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Well, we came to an agreement with KABC because of a program that comes on earlier, Mr. KABC.
I know, and I'm very curious about why this man first calls himself Mr. KABC. And then after a while switches over, takes 1 hour from you.
Well,
calls himself
Mr. KABC. Well, I think that KABC would be very upset if he continued to call himself Mr. KABC while he was on KABC.
Doesn't
make
the man
sense.
Have a name?
He does, but it's a big secret.
And why?
Well, I don't know, because that's what he does.
I mean, he gives a lot of advice and opinions, and you don't even know his name, and one can't check up on him. I mean, one must always consider the source when advice is being given, right?
I suppose so, yes.
Well, this is a real mystery.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, and it is intended to be a mystery. It is indeed intended to be a mystery. That's part of the whole thing, I guess. You know, it's intended that you not understand who he truly is. Well, a little mystery is good in life. Right? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yes, Art. I got an animal ghost story, if you're interested.
An animal ghost story?
A cat.
A cat.
Domestic.
Really? I love cats.
Okay, here's the story. Years ago, visiting some friends of a friend, sitting on a couch at the end of the room, there was a long hallway off to the right that looked down the rest of the house, and very much engaged in the conversation, I had my hand dangling over the edge of the couch, and I felt this cat rub up against my hand. I'm very familiar with cats.
Sure.
And so I responded, you know how you do. You just sort of play with the cat a little bit. Never really looked down. And then the cat moved away, and then I did look down. I didn't see anything. So
So this struck me as strange, and I, you know, just sort of kept my eye watching out of the corner of my eye for the rest of the evening. Every now and then, I would get a glimpse of a cat. So finally, I asked, I said, do you folks have a cat? And the lady responded, what did it look like? So I described the cat. You know, it was mostly black, had a good amount of white on it, though. And she said, that's it. That was our cat. It was killed outside on the road about 6 months ago. Every now and then, somebody thinks they see it. And I recall hearing you say that you had never heard of an animal ghost.
No, that's not true.
Oh, sorry. Well, I misunderstood then.
Actually, I've heard of a number of cases of animals appearing after they'd been dead, so...
Well, anyway, that's what happened. I thought you might be interested. I have a question.
Sure.
I listen when I can. I miss a lot. Any developments on the drummer's brother? Did they ever contact you? Can you tell us what happened?
Ed Dames, yes, Ed Dames has located the man's body. He's dead.
I figured that.
And on March 6th, Ed Dames will be here to give us a more detailed
great, that's
a rendition, and Kathy Kramer will be on that program as well.
Great, that's my birthday. One comment. You know, a lot of us don't have computers, and few of us have access to the Washington Post, and boy, my curiosity is really up. You know what, on the Courtney thing.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that says?
Well, it's a very long article.
Okay, is it just comment or...
No. It's an investigative piece, and I think you would find it very interesting.
Are you going to put it in your newsletter?
That's a good idea.
I think
that's
so.
That's a good idea. Let me see what I can do, all right?
Dynamite.
All right, thank you. Maybe we can get permission from the Washington Post to reprint it in the newsletter. That really is a good idea. Are you listening out there, network? A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
KQMS, Redding, California.
Well, hi.
You know, I think we need mystery in life, too. I was always thinking, if I was God and I knew everything, I would be really bored. There would be no surprises.
Right. There's got to be some mystery in life.
I think so, too. Hey, when you go to Alaska, can I come to your house and house sit?
I always have a house sitter when I leave.
I know, and I'm volunteering.
I see.
I know you have Nintendo.
I do. Yeah, it's true. How do you know that?
I just, well, because you said your son, your Nintendo playing son.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fanatic.
Well, I'd rather house it for you than sleep in some stuffy little room.
Well, I figure if the White House can, in effect, auction off one of their rooms, that I could auction off the famous Uplink room.
Ugh. Well, if I house it for you, I promise not to put bubble bath in the hot tub. Have you ever tried that?
Bubble bath in the hot tub?
It's a big mistake.
Disgusting.
Well, it seems romantic, and you light candles and everything.
Terrible idea.
10 minutes later, when, like, you know, you can't see, are you there? Through the bubble. You know,
terrible.
What am I going to do for my radio show?
What radio show?
You know, I'm going to have a radio show.
You are?
If they get that microband radio.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
But you know what else I was thinking? If I had a radio show, my radio show couldn't call your radio show, huh?
Well, it could.
Well, but I was thinking, isn't that illegal?
No.
No, really?
Really.
That's even a better reason, because that'd be half the fun.
You sure you don't want to bid on the Uplink room?
Well, how much is it?
Well, there is no set price. I mean, it's like, there can be no set price, because then it would be a sale. We've got to operate the way the White House does and go by donation. It's got to be a very loose arrangement, you know.
Oh, really?
A donation, you get to spend a night in the Uplink room. That's how it goes.
Yeah, well, we'll have to talk later then if we have to do it like the White House. Behind closed doors.
Yeah, send a representative with a briefcase.
Yeah, full of green.
Yeah. See you later. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Pat from Burbank, California again.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. Could you continue on with what you got interrupted with? You were saying that you came to an agreement with KABC before I talk about what I want.
Well, I can't disclose I'm not allowed yet to disclose what's going to happen. But
oh, okay. I thought you got cut off on your.
No. I was telling the caller that there is an arrangement. Just
okay.
Be patient. It will be apparent.
Good. Okay. Great. I wanted to talk directly to that caller that said that we were the only creatures of our type in the universe.
Yes.
I was exasperated when I heard it. When he, if he ever took a look at the Hubble deep field that they took a picture of with billions of galaxies to behold, trillions of stars each.
I know.
And I think I know what the whole thing is, what the whole universe is made of, God and everything. It seems like to me that it is as vast as it is. It's made up of protons and neutrons and what have you, and all the laws that govern the molecular structure, the molecules, and the atoms, and the compounds, and everything that goes into that soup, the weak force, the strong force, the magnetic force, the gravity, all of that is what governs the building blocks that turn into proteins and the stuff that we're made out of. And there is no actual God. The actual physical force, physics of the universe is actually where the God comes in. Now, it seems to be such an elaborate amount of people, places, and things in the universe, in other words, aliens and different civilizations, that's what we see as our gods, because they probably come here, they've planted life, they've nurtured us along. You know, there's like stories behind all these things, and we've turned it into some vast religious thing, and we need to have a higher consciousness about it. It doesn't make sense that we stick to these religious views so strongly.
I don't know. It has been said that if there wasn't religion and God, that we would have to invent it.
Oh, sure, because we're a murderous monkey, and that's part of us.
I don't take that much of a negative view of it, and I think there probably is a God. I do believe in God. I really do.
Couldn't it be a God from another part of our of the galaxy that planted us here? We call it God, but it's not really a God of everything, but the God of our galaxy, let's say, or our part of the galaxy, or this part of the universe.
It could be, sir. It could be, and it could be that if we clone, as we're no doubt going to do, that created creature would look at us as we look at what we call God. And with that, my program is over. You get the honors. Do it quick.
From the high desert of Burbank, California, to Canada and all across the world and the cosmos, good night.